Listen to ClassicRedneckRadio.com. I'm your host, Billy Redneck, and tonight we're broadcasting the National Liberty Alliance weekly meeting. It's about 2 to 3 hours in length. You'll be hearing all sorts of important and pertinent information concerning the court systems in America and what's been done in recent months and years, and what the hopes are and the dreams are, and what our efforts must be in order for us to overcome the tyranny that is in the court system and the money system and the love of money, which is the root of all evil. You're listening to Classic Redneck Radio, and I'm your host, Billy Redneck. We are broadcasting this evening the National Liberty Alliance with John Dash and Gerard and the rest of the people who are calling in from all the 3,000 counties which have been constituted in America. And we'll be resuming the broadcast for National Liberty Alliance in just a few moments. Thank you for listening to Classic Redneck Radio.
Mute up the mic. Yeah. All right. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, February 23rd, 2015. Tonight's open forum is being simulcast over three networks. You can find more information about those networks at nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call page, tab up on the top left side. We have Shake and Rake Radio, GMN Broadcasting, and Classic Redneck Radio. Next week, we have another network coming in, the Anti-New World Order Party, I think was the name of it. They'll be coming through Blog Talk Radio. They will be simulcasting us also next week. So next week we'll be broadcasted from four other places. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to nationallibertyalliance.org, nationallibertyalliance.org. Those questions will probably be taken on next week's program, unless one of us checks the mail and we can squeeze it in. But anyway, if you have any questions and you prefer not getting on the mic, or you are calling in without a mic, or whatever the case may be, and you want to ask it by email, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay, all hosts from the radio programs are invited into our queue if they have any questions or comments when we open up into the queue. When we open the queue, if we could just give a few seconds for others to get into the queue that might have something to announce. We have a few people, maybe Gary or Sheila or Eric or Gerard, if you have something to announce. Well, Gary, Gary, you're an open mic, and so are you, Gerard. But Sheila or Eric or anybody else that's one of the leaders of any of our our groups here at National Liberty Alliance. Also, the hosts, if the hosts have anything particular, a question, or, you know, again, just key in when it's time, and we'll get you into the queue. Okay, we broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. If you're listening live over any of these networks and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can call our number, 605-562-3140. Again, that's 605-562-3140. Participant code 385-696. So 385-696. One more time. Phone call or phone number is 605-562-3140. Or and the participant code is 385-696. Okay. Let's see. We do have a new sponsor. We spoke about them last week, New Manor. They're still working out some bugs on the website connections for the product. New Manor system, Unimatic Food, New Manor Food, it is again, working out those bugs. It is a non-GMO long-term storage food. And whatever sales come through, the proceeds will support the NLA effort. So anybody looking for some long-term storage food, we'll hopefully have that icon up on our side of our website shortly. And again, John, through them, we'll be supporting us. Yeah, Gerard?
Participant code is 385-698, not 696. Make that correction.
Oh, that?
385-698.
698.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. I got to remember to go back into my computer and change it because there's a sheet I kick out. But okay. 385-698. Okay. So one more time. 605-562-3140. Participant code 385-698. Okay, there's also a way to listen through your browser. That information, of course, is out there on the Monday night call. Okay, I believe Daniel from New Manor will be coming into the queue early, maybe to talk a little bit about this product, and I think that's what Eric had called me earlier about. And so, again, when we go into the queue, everyone please just hesitate a minute or so until we can get certain people queued through these items. Okay, also, again, we'll request everybody please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab at the top right. And, you know, that we're supported by the people. We have to pay bills, and, you know, so $5 a month isn't, most people shouldn't have any problems affording that. Okay, tonight's reading out of Scripture is going to be out of James again, chapter 2, verses 1 through 13. My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect to persons, or of persons. For if there come unto your assembly a man with a gold ring in godly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and you have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and saith unto him, sit thou there in a good place, and say to the poor, stand thou there, or sit thou under my footstool. Are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Hearken, my brother, my beloved brethren, hath not God chosen the poor of this world, rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom, which he hath promised to them that love him? But ye have despised the poor. Do not rich men oppose you and draw you before the judgment seats? Do not they blaspheme that worthy name by which ye are called? If ye fulfill the royal law according to the Scriptures, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, you do well. But if ye have respect to persons, ye commit sins, and are convinced of the law of transgression. For whosoever shall keep the whole law, and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. For he that said, do not commit adultery, saith also, do not kill. Now if thou committest no adultery, yet if thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye, and so do, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. For he shall have judgment without mercy, that hath shown no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. Okay, that was James chapter 2, verses 1 through 13. okay, tonight, let's see. Before we get started, I'd like to suggest two books. I believe I've brought these books up in the past on probably numerous occasions. But these are two great books. You know, anybody who's really trying to understand our founding fathers, trying to understand where our law came from, looking at the history of law, these are the two books. And, actually it's three. One of them is an essay. The first one is The Making of America by Cleon Soskin, Skosin, I believe it's pronounced. Anyway, you can get that book. It's pretty inexpensive. I know you can buy them by the case. They sell them in cases of 20 at $5 a piece. I know people who buy them and give them away. But they're inexpensive even by purchasing one at a time. You can get them at nccs.net. That's nccs.net. That's where we also buy our constitutional booklets, the same place, nccs.net. The other book, people who are really trying to understand it, these are the books to read. Here's one that's extremely important. I know the first time I read this book, it was a tough read for me in the beginning, mostly because I didn't have a foundation of what I was reading. My second time around, I had really started to learn and do a lot of things after reading the book the first time around. My second time around was much more fruitful with this book. So it could get a little difficult or a little boring or something, but once you start to get into common law and the history and what's going on, you go back and read this stuff, all of a sudden you have some kind of a place to place this information, and it gets very interesting, and it really broadens your understanding of what's going on. And this is Common Law by Brett, B-R-E-T-T, Winters, W-I-N-T-E-R-S. Let me repeat that one more time. Common Law by Brett, B-R-E-T-T, Winters. If you put that in Google, you'll find it. I think I found it for $9.95, you know, so you can find it, Google it, you can get that book. That book particularly traces down the history of common law. It focuses in on the jury and the grand jury and so on somewhat, but basically it is really focusing in on really that war, light against darkness, so to speak. You know, the law of God, common law, coming up against the law of man, or shall I say it the other way around, law of man coming up against the law of God. So it's a really good book to really get a perspective on common law and its history. Now, another one is Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner. Now, we have that up on our website, National Liberty Alliance. You can download that. It's a PDF book, and you'll find it on our nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on Books, Essays, and Lectures. Highlight Books, Essays, and Lectures. Click on Trial by Jury, and then you'll be able to download it. So again, Trial by Jury by Lysander Spooner, up on our website. The topic we're going to look in tonight a little bit, we wrote some papers, and we've been posting some papers. If you go up to nationallibertyalliance.org and you highlight media and click on court filing, or just click on media, you'll get there too. And you'll see the papers that we posted, but underneath is following papers defining some important legal terms that we, the people, should have knowledge of and can assist in your court case at the same time. So this is important. A lot of court cases in these papers, a lot of information, and it gives you a good appreciation of the different courts. The courts we're concerned with are the common law courts, which is also called a court of record. They are synonymous. I'm not sure whether these people are as ignorant as they claim not to be ignorant, but when I've talked with judges or heard judges say, shall I say, when asked that this was a court of record, and they say, well, of course it is. We're taking a record. I don't know if they're really that serious, if they're really that dumb, or if they're just playing games with us, but a court of record is a common law court, okay? And every judge should understand that. The language is in our here in New York, it's in our Constitution. But also it is in our code, our U.S. code, which comes out, of course, of the authority given to that legislators to create that U.S. code under the Constitution. But the key thing we're looking for is the jurisdiction, United States District Courts. The question is are they Article III courts? And I've heard lots of people thinking that they can't get justice there, it's true, and that there must be some other court, they need to look for it, and someone said there was two of them, and one was over here, and one was over there, I don't remember particularly where they said. Then others say, well, you have to look for the court that doesn't fly the fringes, and all these other things. I'm going to hopefully try to clear this up tonight, where and how to find a United States District Courts that are indeed Article III courts. And you will find one in every district. There are 94 districts. And the other thing, is what is the makeup of the common law court? And what about courts that resist the Constitution? So let's look at some of this stuff see once mainly about jurisdiction. These papers are posted up on nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight media, or click on media. And you'll see the papers that are here, the papers we're going to look at tonight, they're only one or two pages long. Court of Law is the first one. I'm not sure whether we're going to look at that one first, but that's what's listed first. Courts that resist the Constitution. And then U.S. District Courts are Article III courts. Now, there's a fourth paper. Maybe we'll look at that in the future called Judicial Immunity. Maybe we'll look at that next week. But jurisdiction, United States District Courts, are they Article III courts? There are 94 judicial district constitutional courts ordained and established by we the people under Article III, Section 1, whereas there shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and Inferior Court, shall hold their office during good behavior. And we do have a footnote here on good behavior. The term good behavior means conduct that is authorized by law, and bad behavior means conduct such as the law will punish. Okay, so anything that's unconstitutional, because that's the law, that puts them into bad conduct, bad behavior, shall I say. Hang on a second here. Okay. Congress constitutionally codified this decree under U.S. Code 28, subsection 132, whereas we read, creation and composition of district courts. A. There shall be in each judicial district a district court. Notice it says a judicial district. It does not say District of Columbia. There shall be in each judicial district, there shall be in each judicial district a district court, which shall be a court of record. Not might be, could be, maybe be. No, it is. It is a court of record. And so that court, which is in your election, within your judicial district, and again, there are 94 districts across America, that is the court of record. It's the court that we find listed and we've been serving. They are known as the United States District Court. Let me go back and reread this, because this is U.S. Code 28, subsection 132. There shall be in each judicial district a district court, which shall be a court of record. In other words, it will be or shall be a common law court, known as the United States District Court for whatever that district may be. And whereas a court of record proceeds according to the course of common law, Jones versus Jones. Under Article 3, Section 2, we the people decreed that the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. Chancery being contradictive was not included in there. In the Constitution, it says law and equity, Article 3, Section 2. Arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. And Article 6, Paragraph 2, reinforces that Congress can only create constitutional courts functioning under the law of the land, whereas we read, the Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuant thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state, not just federal judges, state judges, any judge, the judges in any state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Now, equity courts administer justice according to the system of equity. And equity, when you look it up in Black's Law, we do have a footnote here. In its broadest and most general significance, this term denotes the spirit and the habits of fairness, justness, and right dealing with, and right dealing with, which would regulate the intercourse of men with men. The rule of doing to all others as we desire them to do to us, or as it is expressed by the Lord. Okay, so that is equity. It's supposed to be a fair court, but you know there are rules of different courts, and the question becomes on our equity court, which rule are we being led by? So let me reread that again. Equity courts administer justice according to the system of equity and according to a particular course of procedure or practice. That's Dowell versus Goodwin. This procedure or practice could be under the rules of chancery or the rules of common law. The latter was decreed by the people and articulated under Article 6, titled Law of the Land. The former, that's chancery, was deliberately excluded by the people, it being repugnant to the common law. In conclusion, all United States district courts are courts of law and must proceed under common law and not chancery, thereby finding the 1789 Judiciary Act, Chapter 20, Section 15, null and void, whereas the legislators exceeded their authority when they unlawfully gave the judiciary power to proceed according to the rules of chancery, contrary to the law. This has been a long established, this has been long established in Marbury versus Madison as null and void. Thus, finding all judges who proceed according to Chancery knowingly act under the color of law, thereby hijacking their victims to foreign courts of fiction and are in bad behavior without immunity. This is made clear in the following Supreme Court case. The words District Court of the United States commonly describes constitutional courts created under Article 3 of the Constitution, not the unconstitutional legislative courts operating under Chancery, which have long been the courts of the territories. Morkini versus the United States. For cause and lawful remedy, and this is what your case, any case when you're going into the federal court should be about. By the authority of Article 3, Section 2, Federal District, Article 3, courts of record have jurisdiction in all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Therefore, under Amendment 5, in the Bill of Rights, it is the constitutional jurisdiction and duty of this court to protect people from being deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Any judge or magistrate that denies said duty under color of law is guilty of a felony. And I believe that the key of going into these federal courts and dealing with them is making this position of jurisdiction absolutely clear in your paperwork, letting them know and bringing it up your first time in court. And there's a lot of things you need to know to go into the into a courtroom, and we're not here necessarily teaching people those things, but this is knowledge that people need to have in general anyway. But if you are going into court, you need to make your jurisdiction clear. And these judges will get frustrated. If you understand what you're doing, and they understand what you're doing, they're going to want to get rid of you. Okay. Real quickly, we're going to go through common law courts. And by the way, you know, there's other footnotes in this paper that we read, and people should go back and read. This should study this. This should become part of your curriculum. This needs to be studied. And kept and used to put necessary quotes out of there accordingly. Now, Courts of Common Law is another paper we did. It's two pages, but I'm not going to go too deeply into it. Most of this, these two pages, are footnotes, and I'm not going to read the footnotes. But let me just read the gist of it to understand the Court of Common Law. The opening of a court of record is by action. Okay, that you come in as a plaintiff. An indictment or presentment by the people. So the people open it up every time. And you're supposed to, especially if you're coming in as an action, you need to open it up as a court of record, and you're in a common law court. but, of course, the indictment or presentment by the people opens the court. The conclusion of a court of record is upon a verdict by the people. All the officers need not a functioning, all the officers needed for a functioning of a court of record answer to the people and can only be removed by the people alone. They are magistrates who answer to the people, the coroner and the sheriff. The sheriff is both the bailiff and the jailer also. They answer to the people. All criminal cases are under law. Civil cases are under law or equity. You get to choose. According to common law, see U.S. Constitution, Article 6, Law of the Land, as determined by the plaintiff. So a court of record is made up first of all, it has to be opened. Let's look on the criminal end particularly. In order for a criminal court to be open, there's only one way a criminal court can be open, and that the people have to open it, through the grand jury. The government has to request the grand jury, an indictment from the grand jury, in order to open a court of record if they want to go after somebody. Generally, it is the sheriff who opens the court of record by coming with a prisoner, saying, hey, we caught this guy doing whatever it is. And generally, that should be the way it should happen. Prosecutor, very rarely. And they'd be coming on behalf of the state, asking for a case to be open. So it begins with the indictment of a grand jury. That is the beginning of court. The moment that they take on, they start to listen to the case, they have the option to close it or make it go forward. By indicting or not indicting. If they indict, it then goes into the court. There is a tribunal jury. It's a tribunal. The tribunal is the jury the judge gets to decide nothing. If the judge is in court making decisions, you are not in a common law court. So it gets to the tribunal is we the people. Okay, let's go back. The indictment of the grand jury is we the people. The tribunal, the jury in the courtroom, is we the people. Officers of the court. In the court, there are four officers particularly, and actually there's three. Magistrate, which could be a judge. A judge is also a magistrate. A coroner, if there's a murder involved. And the bailiff and or jailer, which is the sheriff. So there are three persons that make up the court of record. The sheriff is elected by the people and answers to the people. It is his duty, you know, we're going to bring maybe more light to this later, but it is his duty to make sure that a court of record has been applied, that people have been given their due process. He is the officer of the law of that court. And when he sees it going the wrong way, he's got to pull that judge aside and say, or whoever it is that's taking it in the wrong direction, and fix it. He cannot allow a violation of someone's unalienable rights in a courtroom. But they don't know that, and this is what we're trying to teach these guys. Anyway, let's read on. Court officers such as magistrates, coroners, and sheriffs are elected and by and answered directly to the people. The control of these positions by the people on unalienable right, these elected positions cannot be vacated by any elected servant or through legislations. To attempt such an act is an act of war. You can't remove our sheriff. Only we can do that. Now, a court of record means, a court that proceeds according to the common law. Now, I'm going to just read very quickly through this. To be a court of record, you must have four characteristics and maybe a fifth, and this is what they are. And these are covered by different court cases. It seems that Joan versus Jones really pursues through all of these cases, but there's quite a few court cases that are mentioned here and given credit to where these words come from. But here's the definition of a court of a record. A judicial tribunal have an attributes and exercise and functions independently of the person of the magistrate designed generally to hold it. So that's the jury. It proceeds according to the course of common law, not chancery law. Its acts and judicial procedures are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony. There's a record of everything that takes place in that court, and it's kept in a record forever. Has the power to fine and imprison for contempt. And by the way, no other court has that power in the United States. So when you go into a court not of record and they fine you or imprison you, they just violated your unalienable rights. Generally possesses a seal, not necessarily always, but we with National Liberty Alliance are teaching all of the administrators to develop a seal for that county to be used whenever the action of the people through the grand jury or the trial jury at the end of a case is finalized. It needs to get that seal on it. Okay, we get a little bit into on this paper here for the court of record, which is really a court of a common law. We talk a little more about the sheriff and posse comitatus. We're not going to read that, but again, everyone should read these papers. They should know them inside and out. There's a lot of vital materials you can use if you happen to be in court and fighting for your freedom or your unalienable rights. Courts that resist the Constitution, and this is something that you'd want to bring to a judge when it comes to that certain point that's necessary, and I would do it after you write a writ of error and are preparing the lawsuit against that judge so he can't retaliate against you in his court, which in the beginning they won't. And if they realize that you understand what you're talking about, they're going to be a little nervous about bothering with you anyway. So very few people go in with the right attitude. Anyway, courts that resist the Constitution. It will be an evil day for American liberty if the theory of a government outside of supreme law finds lodgment in our constitutional jurisprudence. No higher duty rests upon the court than to exert its full authority to prevent all violations of principles of the Constitution. And that's Downs versus Bidwell. I know everybody here has heard this particular court case before, and I think we have this in our Quo Warranto, too. A law repugnant, continuing on in the paper, this is a one-page paper, by the way, a law repugnant to the Constitution is void. If then the courts are to regard the Constitution and the Constitution is superior to any ordinary act of the legislator, the Constitution and not such ordinary acts must govern the case into which they both apply. Those men who resist the principles that the Constitution is to be considered in court as a paramount law are reduced to the necessity of maintaining that court must close their eyes on the Constitution and see only the law. This doctrine would subvert the very foundation of all written constitution. It would declare that an act which, according to the principles and theories of our government, is entirely void, is yet practical, completely obligatory. It would declare that if the legislator shall do what is expressly forbidden, such act, notwithstanding the express forbidding, is in reality effectual. It would be given to the legislator a practical and real omnipotent with the same breath which professes to restrict their powers within narrow limits. It is prescribing limits and declaring that those limits may be passed at pleasure. Thus, the particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens the principles supposed to be essential to all written constitution, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts as well as other departments are bound by that instrument. Next paragraph. When an oath becomes equally a crime, it is in these words, I do solemnly swear that I will administer justice without respect to persons, and to do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge all the duties incumbent to me as according to the best of my abilities and understanding, agreeably to the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Why does a judge swear to discharge his duties agreeably to the Constitution of the United States if that Constitution forms no rule for his government? If it is closed upon him and cannot, be inspected by him, if such be a real state of things, this is worse than solemn mockery. To prescribe or to take this oath becomes guilty of a crime. Marbury versus Madison. You know, there's a lot inside Marbury versus Madison. It's a little difficult to read. I don't know if I'm expressing it well enough, but you know, you have to go. I found I had to go a little slow in there, reading these paragraphs to really follow the logic. Anyway, where he writes, whoever wrote the paper on this talks a little differently than most people, and they're very descriptive of different things. But anyway, no judicial process. Oh, no, let me go up one chapter here. Where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rule making or legislative legislation which would abrogate them. That's Miranda versus Arizona. No judicial process, whatever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside of the limits of the or the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued. And an attempt to enforce it beyond these boundaries is nothing less than lawless violence. Abelman versus Booth. We judges have no more right to decline the exercise of jurisdiction which is given than to usurp that which is not given. The one or the other would be treason to the Constitution. Cohen versus Virginia. That statute, which would deprive a citizen of a right of person or property without a regular trial and according to the course and usage of common law, would not be the law of the land. Hoke versus Henderson. Courts that resist the Constitution. Okay, anyway, people should understand these things, whether you go into courts or not. Anyone who's particularly getting involved in the work that we're looking to get involved with, you should understand those things. So jurisdiction is extremely important. Some people will claim, you've got to go in there and argue jurisdiction. I say if you go in there and argue jurisdiction, you're in the wrong jurisdiction. You shouldn't have to argue jurisdiction. You state it, you make the judge say it, and you move on. And if you can't get it to state it, and he will not say it, then you need to object, write a bill of a writ of error, and move into another, well, keep that case going, but move another case going against that individual because they're violating you and bringing you into a foreign court, okay? Understand the makeup of the common law court, and remember, you know, the juries that are sitting right now, we all know they're puppet juries. They're controlled totally by the prosecutor and or the judge. They got total 100% control. It's pretty sickening, some of the information we've heard from people on the inside involved with some of these juries and how the prosecutors deal with these juries, how the judges deal with these juries. They pal around with them. The judges, they're best friend. They laugh and, you know, little conversations. We've got some of this stuff actually recorded. Same thing with the prosecutor. And so when the time comes with the prosecutor or the judge to get his way, and they say, well, now, you got to understand that if this is the case and this happens and they break this law, you know, they broke the law and you got to find them guilty, and they read out the law and they describe a few things. Well, they just did some jury tampering and they need to go to jail because that's what jury tampering is. The jury gets to decide both the facts and the law. They get the law is on trial. The law is on trial in every case for that case. And the law is on trial often just for itself. If it's unconstitutional, if it violates your unalienable rights, and any law that tries to control your behavior that does not hurt another individual, any law that tries to do that is no law at all. We have liberty. We're in a free nation. We are a people of law. We get to decide what the law is, and you can read about that in the Constitution for the United States of America. And its capstone Bill of Rights or Bill of Prohibitions. Okay, that brings us to the end of those papers. Gerard, Gary, do you guys have anything particular? Sheila, Eric, if you want to get into, if you got anything particular, I'm going to open up. I don't want anyone to get into the queue yet. I'm going to open up the queue. Sheila and Eric, if you have anything to announce and you want to get into the queue, go right ahead. Gerard, is there anyone out there that you might want to ask to get into the queue? Also, Daniel from Numana, Star 6, to get into the queue. I want to give you a few minutes to talk about the Numana product that we're going to be putting up on our website shortly, hopefully before this next Monday meeting. So, Daniel, if you're out there, go right ahead. And again, anybody else that has anything, before we go to Daniel, Gerard, do you have anything particular, or Gary, you got anything you want to bring up?
No, I'm good right now. I got something going that's not ready this week.
All right. Yeah. Who else, Gary?
I'm good.
You're good? Okay. Okay, we're going to go first to Daniel from Numana Foods. Let me unmute. Daniel. Go right ahead, Daniel.
Hi. Very glad to be here. How's it going, John?
Good, thank you.
Well, I've just been listening like everybody, and Numana is very happy to be involved with you guys, and we feel that we can offer some storable food that will help prepare your constituency, prepare your members, and also raise some money for your efforts. So we feel there's a great partnership here, and we're very excited to be involved with it.
Okay, great. Anything else? Do you think we'll be ready for next Monday to get it up on the website?
Well, sure. Let me tell you basically what's going on. We've helped you create your own website. It's called NLAReady.com. NLAReady.com. This is kind of a soft introduction to your audience. We'll be doing some more. We worked very hard on
And we will have that link up on the right side of our website. We're going to have an icon. I think we're going to use the Liberty Bell or something, and we'll have an icon with the Numana food on it, and you'd click that, and you would get to the same page. What was that website again?
NLAReady.com.
Okay.
National Liberty Alliance Ready.com. NLAReady.com. Okay. And the... you go to the site, you'll learn a little bit about our food. We have GMO-free food, which has no chemical preservatives, no soy, no high-fructose corn syrup, no aspartame. It actually tastes good. This food's been all over the place. We've done similar partnerships with other dealers throughout. We were the first company that was at the Bundy Ranch last year when they had their situation. We're very concerned about Liberty, and so by supporting our products, they're directly supporting NLA by doing so.
Okay, thank you, Daniel. I appreciate it. And like I said, we'll get that link up on our website as soon as we can, sometime this week, we hope. And we should be, we'll announce, hopefully, that it's active and up and running, hopefully, by next Monday.
It'll probably be up and running, truth be told, by early tomorrow morning, but they told me by Wednesday for sure. And so you guys interested in long-term storable foods, it's easy to fix. It comes in buckets. Just add water. If you can boil water, this is food to be prepared with. It's food to camp with. It's food to prepare your family against any situation where you might need long-term storable food. So we're very excited. Thank you so much for your time.
It's an old package in 5-gallon buckets also, so it's sealed buckets, and it's really easy if you had to get on to the move and put a bunch of these things into your car. You have plenty of food with you.
Yes, the buckets are fantastic. They're hinged. They have a handle. They're stackable. It's just a very good system. We feel we're at the top of the industry and a very good product. So you let us know what we can do for you. We're always eager to help, especially NLA members, any way possible.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, John. Okay. God bless everybody.
You too. Thank you. All right, we'll take our next caller now. Okay, anybody that has a question or a comment, anything they might want to add in here, feel free to hit the *6 and *1, I believe it is. So *6 and then 1. It'll tell you what the second number is once you get in there. But *6 to get into the queue. Okay, Maud from New York, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Maud?
Good. Last week, you were interested in finding someone with a silver change.
With what? Oh, silver?
Yes.
If we could find someone that's selling silver that we can sell off our website, we would do that because we think that's a very important item for two reasons. Number one, I think it would be an item that would move pretty decent and help to support National Liberty Alliance, make a few bucks on each of the sales. But also, it is definitely a product that people need in hard times. We know that we're heading for an economic collapse. Not an economic collapse. Let me fix that. We are heading for a monetary collapse, collapse of our money, and that's why people should be getting some food and should be getting some silver, and putting it up because in the hard times it'll be food that'll keep you alive, of course, and food that'll be traded for other things, and then at some point when we get back to normalcy, providing we the people do our job, stand up and get this structure prepared now that we're doing, and get organized across the nation, so we be able to get past this process of time without losing our liberty, and if that's the case, at some point. Some normality will start to come back, and anybody who's got silver coins, particularly junk silver, because, junk silver, I don't know why they call it junk silver, but, these are the silver half dollars, the silver dimes, the silver quarters. Those things everybody understand, and you'll be able to trade that very easily for any item or anything at some point in time. Again, food and silver. But, yeah, if you have some connection of some people who are selling silver,
I have someone who is dealt with who is extremely honorable, and I would only recommend him because I know he's extremely honorable. Now, how do you want to do it?
Do you
want me to give
you
his number, or do you want me to send you an email?
Yeah, do you have my phone number?
What's your phone number?
845.
645?
No, 845.
845, yeah.
233.
3.
6560. Ask him to try to give me a call at that number tomorrow if he can. And if you can send me an email and just put silver in the subject matter.
John, I go on the website, but I don't, I'm a little bit of a senior. So what exactly, who do I send the email to?
Yeah, John, J-O-H-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org. So John at nationallibertyalliance.org. Just send me that individual's name and phone number and put silver in the subject matter. Meanwhile, you can give him my phone number, and he could try to get me tomorrow. I'll look for him tomorrow and see once what we can do. Okay?
Okay, John. I hope I can get you together because he's a really people would be in very good hands.
Appreciate it.
Somebody who is a very professional person. Has been doing it for a long time and, as I said, extremely honorable.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, Maud. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I did.
Tell everybody down in Long Island I said hi, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. We're freezing here, you know. We're not used to it.
Well, we're freezing up here, too, you know.
Oh, I know, but upstate, they're a little more used to it than us here.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I'm iced in. John, I did post something on the Liberty Alliance website, Facebook. It's a very important case. And it's a young guy out in Washington who was distributing MMS. And I posted it because he has been so abused, and people should know how they're doing in the courts and how the courts are accessing our accounts, you know, our Social Security.
Where is this court case at?
His last name is Smith.
No, where's the case? Where's the case at?
It's in Washington State.
Washington State. Do we have contact information to him?
I don't think so. I could send you a link with the email.
Well, I'm not.
Or I'll post it again on the Facebook.
If anybody can get a hold of that individual, they should tell them to get out to National Liberty Alliance. Yeah.
John, he's been working on, you know, natural law and all that sort of thing, but the feds...
Right, well, that's why he needs to get out
to get him.
That's why, if we can get a message to him, he should come out to nationallibertyalliance.org. He should read about a little bit about us, join us, and he should go to our group area, and he should join our courtroom observers group and ask for assistance there. And people will help him. People will go to court with him. They'll videotape. Look, this is an extremely, and I know Eric...
25 years of jail, John.
Yeah, I understand, and that's why
they
we need
are
help also,
absolutely, they have...
They're insane. They're insane.
I guess you don't
this
have
is,
time, but,
this
you know,
is,
I posted
no, no,
this
is,
there for people to listen to this story.
Maud,
Smith is his last name. It was on Project Camelot.
Right.
It was posted. She interviewed him, Carrie Cassidy, on Project Camelot.
Right. Maud, let me talk here. This is an extremely important case, and I'll tell you why. Anybody who understands and knows what MMS is, and they're going to try to give this guy 25 years in jail for distributing or using MMS, that's insane. That's the right. That's your unalienable right to good health. You know, MMS generally is used for cancer, and it treats cancer very well. But it treats a lot of different other diseases. But cancer is one that we really use it for particularly. And the government, if the government wins this case against this person, they'll call it a precedence. And anybody using this MMS at some point is like smoking pot. They're going to put you in jail or, you know, something. But this stuff here, to 25 years for trying to live, to trying not to die, they're going to put someone in jail for that? This, I think, is an important case, and out there in Washington, in the state of Washington, anybody that knows about this case and might be able to get a hold of this person, get them out to National Liberty Alliance, have them read up a little bit, let them get educated on our website. We'll give him the education he needs to do what he has to do. If he has the general knowledge, he should be able to get through quickly. But the key thing is to get assistance by joining in and joining one of our groups, again, called Courtroom Observers. Eric, I know, knows about these kind of medical things. I'm sure he's... I know he's very much aware of MMS, and so this should be an important case to us, really. I mean, not as a grand jury, but generally we should be watching it, and these are the kind of people that we need to get out of jail once we get back into power, these people being imprisoned for nothing. It's ridiculous.
Well, they've been pursuing him for years, and he thought he was free and clear, and they broke into his lab and stole his computers and did all the terrible things that they do. But what he found out is that they have an investment, they have a bond on him going to jail.
I know. Look, there's a guy, Brzezinski. He's out west somewhere. I forget what state. But his name is Brzezinski. We do have his videos up on our website under the health. Dr. Brzezinski.
Yeah,
now,
he's been
healing cancer for 30 or 40 years.
He just won his case.
Yeah, I understand that. He's been healing cancer for 30, 40 years. But since he began his practice all the way up till today, the federal government has not left this guy alone. They keep bringing case after case after case after case after case against this guy. He has been in court three times and won three times. I guess he just won recently. The last two times
I just saw it posted.
Yeah, the last two.
I've heard him. He's a very, very wonderful man.
Right. The last two times he won the case that I was aware of prior to this last one, but the two before that, the first grand jury acquitted him. The second case, when the grand jury, the people of the trial jury on his first jury heard that he was being violated again, they actually came to the courtroom to support this guy. And the second jury also dismissed the case. There was nothing here as far as they were concerned. And this man was curing people of cancer, absolute proof of it. If you go watch the videos, the documentaries on this, it's just amazing. And the federal government just doesn't want to leave him alone. Of course, they're doing the will of the pharmaceutical companies who want to keep us sick and ill and dying because there's a lot of money in it. So that's where that's at. Anyway.
I just saw something posted that said that someone who wants to eat healthy is mentally ill.
Yeah, you see how bad things have gotten? All right, well, I got to move on, Maud. Thanks for the call.
I'll send you the email.
Please,
I'll send you the link, and I'll tell. His name is Paul.
Okay, I'll be looking for it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Donald, go right ahead.
Oh, this is Don in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
How you doing, Don?
Thank you for the lesson. It was very informative. Very informative. They're deeply entrenched. My question deals with what article are we dealing with when we have a question of international violation of rights, like the human rights issues. What court is that?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, look, if you're on a land here in the United States and anybody violates your unalienable rights, you have a right to go under common law, trial by jury, and to be restored of that injury. Now, you're talking about some foreign entity violating you in some way?
Yeah, like wiretapping, for example.
Well, wiretapping, like who's doing a wiretapping? You're talking about the president doing wiretapping through the
law enforcement,
well,
or
these people may think they're legally doing this, but I want to tell you, if you're listening to us now, understand this, you are breaking the law right now. If you are spying out what we're doing, being interested in what we're doing is one thing, and if you happen to be an agent or something, that's fine. But if you're coming here to spy us out without purpose, without reason, you're violating our rights, our inalienable rights, and you can't spy into people. That's illegal. It's a punishable crime by not only jail time, but a fine. Now, the same thing, if law enforcement is listening in on phone calls, and we know they're doing this, okay? We know they're doing this. At some point, people are going to be held liable and responsible for this. Most of the people involved, the mechanism part of this whole thing, of course, are just useful idiots. They're not questioning authority. They're not paying attention. They just don't understand. They're just lost bodies, so to speak. And hopefully, they'll be recovered at some point in time. But the people who have initiated this stuff, well, that's war against the people, that's war against the Constitution, and that's worthy of jail time. And the people will decide what to do at some point when those kind of cases come up, you know?
Okay. Because it was kind of like a two-part question, because with the creation of this Homeland Security question, what impact did that have on the citizens' constitutional rights, U.S.
Well, yeah, that's huge. The Homeland Security, in my opinion, was put out there to destroy the barriers, the walls between the other agencies. And it's necessary to have those walls. They got all these excuses, and in the name of emergency, you got to do this. And they took down all these walls, and they put it under one cloak. Now you have a situation, the FBI, you know, at one point were really focusing in on the stuff we're talking about and trying to do something about it, and they were taken down from doing anything. Then one of the things with bringing all of these different agencies together under the Homeland Security is one of the downfalls of that problem. It's unconstitutional, and of course they've gone way beyond what they're able to do. When you go into the Constitution, the only particular agencies of any enforcement or of law enforcement in this nation, okay, identifies with the courts, the federal courts, so all the necessary offices. And we can understand and appreciate the marshals particularly, and marshals were created exactly like a sheriff, the authority of the sheriff, the power of the sheriff, and you can't get, once a marshal is appointed, you can't get rid of him. Only the people can get rid of him through an indictment. Other than that, he has to take his 4 years out, and the president can't remove him, nobody can remove him. And that's an important point, that they cannot be removed from office, because now he can be a law enforcer, and he can enforce that law, and nobody can do anything about it. So that is one of the peace officers that are being able to create it for the use of the courts. I can see, personally, I can see the FBI, that kind of an authority being created for that purpose. But on the land here, as far as the law of the land, I can't think of any other two agencies that are law enforcement agencies that belong anywhere other than the marshals and the FBI. Anything else, as far as I'm concerned, has no authority in the Constitution. Homeland Security certainly doesn't have it. There's no authority for such an agency. Where does that come from? And many other abusive agencies out there. You know, we can think of that real big one out there. You know, they don't belong, they don't have any authority and power. But anyway. Okay, Donald, appreciate your call.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for your response.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ali from Colorado.
Hello, John.
How you doing?
Hey, Don, I got some simple basic questions on court structure. Now, I'm looking at a U.S. map. It's got 11 districts, okay? You Google list of courts, there's several in each district, and there's several judges in each court. Now, do those district courts, do they service the states that they cover, or just how does that work?
Well, look at all of the district courts, I have one judge appointed. One judge. Now, that judge, I would believe, or maybe if there's more judges, look, if your population is there and so on and so forth, I guess Congress can appoint more judges. I don't see a problem with that. Magistrates, of course, generally should be more in use of than judges, because all of the courts generally should start off as a common law court unless the parties request equity. Now, equity, in our case, still operates under common law. And so it proceeds according to the rules of common law, which means that ultimately that judge is the jury in that trial, but it is incumbent upon him to act constitutionally, to make a decision according to the facts and the Constitution, which is the law. That's what's incumbent upon him. And if he should fail doing that, if we had a just system, where the people were in charge, that's exactly what he would be doing, because he'd be caught making oddball decisions that just violate people's unalienable rights, and he'd be in bad behavior, and we'd get rid of him real quick. So I think they'd be making the right decisions if they were really applying justice. Now, it gets advantageous for a case to go into an equity court, for instance, if you have a contract dispute. Okay, I would much prefer to go into a court with a judge and let him make the decision on it, as long as I knew he was going to be justice. You know why? Because that case can go through a lot quicker than going through a jury trial. That's why. So it's up to the people to decide. Now, the Constitution requires that option available for anybody if it's over $20. Now, $20 back in those days was a lot more money than it is today, but nevertheless, that's what it was. And so it's up to the people. It should be common law. They can request equity. And again, that judge, you can appeal to another to the appellate court. And the appellate court, at least in New York, is four individuals, three active, one inactive. In case something happens to one, there's always three that here. And then they make the decision. And then you can appeal it again. This is how it works in New York anyway. You can appeal it again to the Court of Appeals. That's the final one, and I think that's a seven-panel judge, if I recall. I was talking with Gerard about this the other day. I think he said it was a seven-panel judge. And then they make the final decision. Now, if it's a jury, if you go to a trial by jury, once they make the decision, game over. That's it. There is no appeal to a decision by, I'm not a grand jury, but a trial jury. There is no decision. There is no appeal to the decision of a trial jury. That's common law. So, but again, that procedure will take a lot longer. Simple contract cases, cut and dry cases. You want to just get them before a magistrate or judge. Well, they have to be a judge then to hear it. So you want to get it before a judge. And let me tell you something. Any case that takes any more than one hearing, and the hearing shouldn't be a hearing. The hearing should be the trial. You got your paperwork, goes back and forth, and when you're ready for the trial, so to speak, then you come in on a certain day, and you get to make your positions, and the other side gets to make their positions, and of course the judge has read all the papers, and then he makes a decision on the case, and it's over with. But when they start calling you in for these hearings, you know right away now, when you get called into a hearing, I object to the process and procedure. This is not common law process and procedure. What are we doing here, Your Honor? You certainly don't have the authority to be able to make any decisions in this case because this is a court of record and this is going for a jury. Or if he is acting as judge and he's calling in for a hearing, what are you doing here, Your Honor? The common law requires put the case together. You come and you settle it in one day, and unless it needs days and days to argue it. But most cases are very simple; could be done in minutes or an hour. You know.
Okay.
And get over it.
Is there a federal marshal assigned to each district court?
Every federal district court, there is a marshal appointed by the President of the United States. There is also a special agent, one special agent who is responsible for the acts of the FBI within that district, and there is one for every district. So you have a federal agent, a special agent, and you have a marshal.
Okay, now they'd have the same responsibility as, say, like a county sheriff?
Marshal has the exact same power and authority as the sheriff.
Okay. Okay, now... State-wise, the states have district courts, right? They got county courts and district.
Well, yeah, you know, that is true. I guess there are some states, they have different, they call them different things. But, you know, here in New York, generally, I think what it is you have whatever is the Supreme Court in each county. Each county has the highest court, and that is the Supreme Court, by whatever name you call it. And that's the court you want to go into if you have a problem. You don't want to go into any other court. You want to go into that court, the highest court in that county, which should be a Supreme Court. They may call it something else. And here in New York, we call it the New York Supreme Court of Dutchess County, New York Supreme Court of Greene County, Orange County, or whatever county you're in. Okay? But other than that, it is the Supreme Court. And so there's only one New York State Supreme Court, ultimately, but they have a presence in every county. And that is, in New York, that is the court of record. It's in our Constitution here in New York that it is a court of record. So they have to act according to a court of record. They don't. They act under chancery also. We have to fix all that. But in any event, that's the way it works. So whatever the name they call that court, that's the highest court in that county. That's the court you want to go to in that state.
Okay, last question. Those papers you were reading, are they on the national website?
Yeah, if you go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on media or court filing. You come down a little bit, and it's under the Quo Warranto, the Information Bill of Exchange, the mandamus to the sheriff, and then you'll see there's four papers that are there. The one we haven't read yet, it's called Judicial Immunity. We may look at that next week. But those three papers we read tonight are right there, and they should be downloaded, printed, and studied. People, look at this is powerful stuff if you're in court, I want to tell you. Powerful, yep. Powerful stuff. And, again, you take some knowledge and some experience, but knowledge and experience to really be able to write a case and defend yourself. And this is the stuff of your defense right here.
Yeah. Well, I'll spend my whole lifetime trying to stay out of court. So I know.
Yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks, John.
Okay. Thanks, Ollie. Have a good day.
You too.
Okay. Thank you. Jersey Jason, how you doing?
Hi, I'm Jason from Jersey. Hi, John, how you doing? Good to hear that you're out of the woods and you're in the meadows.
All right.
You hear me? Yeah.
Yep.
Actually, I sent on an email to you, Gerard, Gary, Eric, regarding Dr. Aiden's birth certificate program, to which he's needs 20,000 people. For $200, $250, he creates a trust program that become an accredited investor. And he's done this over the years, 15 years, and if this can be distributed.
Well, I don't know anything about that. I don't understand really what you're talking about. I don't know that we want to talk about this on this program. I don't know if it's legal, but what you could do is call me and discuss it with me. Let me look into it before I would let people hear about this stuff, because I do have a duty to make sure whatever comes through this program has been researched and it's real stuff. And of course, we make mistakes from time to time.
Hold on a minute.
You know, last couple of weeks ago, I made an error because I didn't do my duty well enough. I did not research enough information what was going on in Connecticut, and I relied on some source of information that came to me that was not through my research, and therefore it left us hanging in the wind, so to speak, and people did get some false information. We corrected it as soon as we could, and we made all the paper changes within a week on our website. Not that there was that much to it, but we certainly don't want to get anything out there that is misinformation, that is not true, well-researched, and things that may put us in jail. There are a lot of people doing a lot of things that will put people in jail, and I don't know what that guy's doing. So let's talk offline before we even... would even talk about this in the air.
All right. Also,
if you want to call me tomorrow. I would say, look, tomorrow is what, Tuesday?
Yeah, Tuesday.
Okay, I'm going to be at the doctor's tomorrow with my wife, so, you know, during the day is not good for me. But tomorrow evening is probably good, and I'd like to get Rod in on this, and maybe Gary, and maybe Robert, and maybe a few other people, so we can dig into what you're talking about. But I don't want to talk about it.
Well, again, I did send it on to everyone in leadership some time back, and to everyone. So hopefully didn't get deleted, John. Anyway, another thing, it's amazing. You try to communicate with the marshal, and the peons are under the delusion that they're not our servants. And this is in New Jersey, Newark office. I called it where it's challenged.
Right. Let me just say two things about that. Number one, in the major cities like Newark and New York City and Chicago, I mean, those places, they own everybody. Marshals are owned, basically. I mean, yeah, I guess there could be some cases where they're not. But I really don't know particularly. But from what I'm hearing, those are the places that these guys are really out of control. Now, generally speaking, in other districts, I don't know if it's all as bad as that. I really don't know. But nevertheless, a lot of this stuff is because of ignorance. They are trained with a certain knowledge and a certain amount of information concerning what their job is, and they're controlled particularly by the judge and even the prosecutor. It's called the U.S. attorney. They're controlled by both those two individuals. Everything they got to do, they got to go ask mommy and daddy. They got it all backwards, and they don't know. We're going to try to free these guys. You don't have to talk to mommy, and you don't have to talk to daddy. Go do the right thing, and you're going to be responsible for what you do. Now, we want to train them. We definitely don't want to attack the marshals. We don't want to attack the sheriffs. They're as dumb as we are, okay? And we're just figuring this out, and we want to help them figure it out. So we want to give them as much opportunity as possible to become re-educated, to come to the knowledge of truth, to understand what their true power, their true authority, their true duty, and the fact that when they don't act within duty, they're not only violating the people's unalienable rights, they're participating in the destruction of America. Okay? And this is the message eventually needs to get through to these people. And the papers we are writing are designed for this purpose, to prime the pump, so to speak.
Yeah. John, has the cover letter been sent out for our sheriffs and other individuals?
No, not yet. That's still being worked on up on the level where the state and the coordinators, the district coordinators are working all that information that's necessary to get that campaign going. And I will say, last week we were 6 weeks away from bringing this to a pinnacle, to a really big point where we need to bring it. And this week, we're still 6 weeks away. So why are we still 6 weeks away? because we need help. There's a lot of people who may be tuning in, listening, or whatever, but they're not participating. They're not volunteering their time. We need people to get in, get to your state coordinators, get to the district coordinators, tell them you're here to help. I can give you a half hour a week. I can give you an hour a week. I can give you a day a week. Whatever it is you can do, you can say, I could take on a task. I could do something over the course, you know, and when I can get to it in a week, I can do a three-hour job or something. But let's help these people. Let's get this job done so we can finally get down to the business of the people, and that is to start taking our courts back.
Yeah. Would that be, like, say, the media group trying to draft something up?
No.
In that aspect? No,
so no. No. We have different groups of people. We have different committees. Gerard, if you want to pipe in here, some of these committees, or Gary, I know we have a committee, for instance, that is letter writing. We got another committee that is helping out with our writing in itself, as far as once we get people of knowledge and put it together, we get it down to them, and then they kind of chew on it and help us out. And, you know, we want to get as much opinion as possible and mold and form out the best paper we can. So we have a committee for that, and we have other committees that are being developed. Anybody who wants to get onto a committee, you know, we have a – and let me take the opportunity to speak about this just for a minute. We have a page, okay, on our website, which is the Court Finding Media page. I'd like to open up. I did open this page up originally. Down on the bottom there was people can come in and comment, but they went off point. And I did. I think I mentioned this last week. I'd like to keep this really educational, intellectual, focused, building up, not tearing down. Anybody that's going to come in here and say, oh, I can tell you how terrible NLA is and this guy John, and I can tell you this, to attack me on our own website or to attack what NLA is doing, of course, is not going to be tolerated. But, you know, we need to be positive. If people see a better way to write something that's already been written and filed, let's say, hey, you know, if we should have looked at this and look, let's do it in a positive manner. So what I wanted to do, and I put in a comment area below, is for on-point discussion, in other words, what this page is about. Off-point conversations will be deleted. Abusive members will be blocked. And that's simple. But immediately we really went right off the board. So what I'm going to look to do is set up an actual board here, which we will have different subjects, very few, but they will be, you know, maybe one on the sheriff or one on this or one on that, talking about the legalities, the papers that are written, what's going on, some other ideas and things to be added, you know, and let's get a real serious conversation going here, an intellectual, educational conversation concerning the things that we, the people, need to understand and be articulate about and come involved in that conversation. So many people who may just be reading it, they'll become educated. The people participating will become more educated, and so on. And then we'll have something we can really use and that we've really chewed out. Now, out of this, we will be looking for people who seem to are bright in certain areas where we may be looking to create a committee with people to work on a certain task. And so when we see the people who are conversing here and have common law understanding, have done the research, understand how things work, understand Article III courts, and they understand the immorality of the fictional courts, and we see that being expressed, now we can try to see if these people are interested in taking on some duties and some responsibility, which may involve some writing and may involve a number of different things. But anyway, that's an important thing. So hopefully soon we'll be able to get some kind of a page up. For right now, papers are there to be read. People should be reading them and really thinking about them, literally studying them. Go ahead. Anything else, Jason?
We got it.
9-10 minutes, John.
Yeah,
okay.
We got a lot of stuff in the works. I think people will be pleased. We're not ready about to talk to them all about them this week, but you're going to see NLA raising the bar as far as our public image goes and our response time and how we answer and using the resources that we have. We have a lot of resources out there, and it's a matter of getting them together and using them for what they're good for, and we're in the process of doing that now, and I think people are going to be pleasantly surprised at the results that you're going to see in the next 30 days or so. So that's all I wanted to say. And I you know what? I went to unmute myself, but I think I dumped him. You're on the next question already.
Well, he was on the end of that anyway. He was there for quite a while. He can get back in if he wants. So.
Yeah.
Okay. 203 Connecticut. Give us your first name.
Yeah. Hi, it's Edward John. How you doing?
Oh, how you doing, Ted?
Good. Good. Yeah. I have a few different things, but who knows how much time we'll have. So I'll just go into start with one thing with you know, as far
before
as
you go, let me just make an announcement here. Anybody that wants to get into the queue, star six, and I'd like to just repeat for the people listening in on the live stream over radios, and they would like to ask a question or make a comment, they can call 605-562-3140. The participant code is 698, and when you get in, you hit star six to get into the queue with your question, and as soon as we can, we'll get to you. Okay, so that, let me repeat that one more time, 605-562-3140, participant code 385-698. Let's try to remember to do that once an hour, Gary, Gerard, but go right ahead.
Oh, sure. No, thank you, John. Well, you know, I'm always concerned about all the inconsistencies in the present court system and to prove at every moment why the system is no good. And I'll just bring out one thing. Of course, there's so many things you can never cover all the problems with it. But the reason I'm into that is because to convince people that it's just, you know, that what we're doing here is so much better than anything that we have presently. Now, for example, you know, someone could have evidence to clear somebody in either a criminal situation, like maybe somebody has a recording. And with the present system, because of some of the laws, especially in Connecticut, you're really not supposed to introduce any recordings, even though it could clear somebody.
Well, I'd like to say something about that, though. Is Connecticut has a law to prevent recording?
Yeah, they have. See, depending on the state, you have one-party consent and two-party consent. Unfortunately, in Connecticut, it's two-party consent.
Okay, I'd like to say something about that. It doesn't matter what it is in your state, but I can understand that you can run into a problem and it's another legal battle you have to make. But let me tell you something. Anybody who's got a recording, you know, I go into courts, I record, and the main reason I record is in order to make sure I understand exactly what these guys said, and so that I can write a very, very accurate paper on it. You know, I can then do an affidavit, a sworn affidavit, and file it in. When you do a sworn affidavit and you use the recording to make your points, now they have to rebut that. If they don't rebut that, that affidavit stands, and chances are they're not going to rebut it, okay? And if you're in a federal court, then that's a whole different animal anyway, because the federal laws are different than the state laws, and I'm not sure what the federal laws say anyway, but ultimately any law that restricts you your right to record would be wrong. Now, it is true, you cannot, and this would be in common law, just common sense, you can't go and bug someone and record conversations of people. That is a violation of law. But if you are in that conversation and you are a participant of that conversation and you record that conversation, that's your business.
And law enforcement's been using that for years. Don't they always go in with a wire and use it as evidence, and then they're going to tell you that you can't do that? That's bullcrap.
Yeah, that's a good point, Gerard. So anyway, but go right ahead with your – I just wanted to jump in on that because you can do an affidavit using a recording. That's my point.
Right, exactly. I got some notes on that. No, I wanted you to jump in at any point. That's the whole idea of it. Now, yeah, because I'm even thinking – because this thing, as you know, I'm on point. I'm involved with so many people, so many cases, and something's coming up that I'm thinking – that if that judge will not allow that, maybe that's the opportunity to fight that's an unconstitutional law and then go all the way with it, all the way with that, and then it would have to be introduced in there eventually. But use that as a platform.
Listen, yeah, our court watchers go in with, and we force the judges to allow us to record and videotape the court proceedings. Now, do you think the reason the judges behave is they know that that tape will be used against them if they break the law? And that's a one-side tape, is it not? I rest my case.
Also, every court has a recording going on of the entire proceedings of all the cases, one after another, and the people aren't informed of that. A lot of people are very surprised to know that an actual physical audio recording is being taken.
Right.
And just think about that, because they use that as evidence.
This is just a matter of the people asserting themselves. They will get used to it eventually. That's what this is about. Everybody has to go in and retrain them, and that's what this is about. The more we insist upon it, the more used they're going to it they're going to become.
Right, and once the common law juries are in there, and the common law juries are in there, they're not going to be able to bring up an unconstitutional law like that, because if they were to bring it to the grand jury, oh, this guy recorded a conversation. Was he part of that conversation? Yeah, he was. It was in a contract, and they were talking about things in business and so on and so forth. Well, then take it somewhere else, because we're not going to hear the case, because we can't. You see, now if he was recording a conversation that he had nothing to do with, that's spying, bugging, whatever you want to call it, that's a wrongdoing.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. No.
And that's common law. So to heck with their statutes at some point soon.
Yeah. So you think that if a judge, because like I said, my thinking in case a judge won't allow a very important piece of a recording. Because say, here's the thing, in situations where there's one side, everything they say is a lie, okay? Then the other side is telling the truth 100%, okay? And the only way to prove that the person that is 100% telling the truth is to have that recording.
Otherwise, well, there's another way. Take that recording, and the more word by word, because the other side will think about that. Boy, this is pretty darn accurate to this conversation here, or someone will say that maybe, and they'll start to worry about a recording existing. But the key thing is this: you make an affidavit, you write it down, you put it on paper, word for word, and
transcribe it. Right.
Yeah, transcribe it. Make it an affidavit and file it. I guarantee you the other side will not come back with a rebuttal on it, because that's
all you got to do is say, I took notes. Hey, I took good notes.
But remember, at some point, the common law grand jury may come into being at this case at some point, and then they'll be able to deal with this problem and refuse, and you'll be able to surface the tape in Connecticut. But the thing is again, all of these it's amazing. It's amazing on how many cases are won and the other side doesn't make one affidavit. The Supreme Court has ruled over and over and over again, the only thing necessary to make a prima facie case is an affidavit, period. You don't need anything else. You don't even need to be able to write the papers. Do your affidavit, and that is the key to the case. Now, when the other side, the fact of the matter is, and again, the courts have ruled on this, this is common law principle also, an affidavit unrebutted stands as truth in a court of law, period, end of subject, nothing else to talk about. So when you go in and you tell the truth and the other side has their turn and they don't rebut that truth, they don't deny it, okay, they lost. They lost.
Well, here's the thing. Of course, we were planning on doing that, but what we're thinking is, okay, so we have the affidavit, whatever, but then the other side does rebut it because they just continue to lie already. So here's the interesting thing, and this is real quick. There was already a hearing, but now we have a shot second week in March to go in on a modification and have another complete hearing. But would you believe that, well, of course you'd believe it. Listen to this. Like I said, the other side completely lied. Everything's a lie, and the judge went with it. Now, this is the opportunity, so that's why we're going to go with the affidavit, but they could just continue lying. So I'm just thinking.
But they never come back with an affidavit. You'll find that the other side talks through their lawyer, and the lawyer may swear or affirm the thing. That's meaningless. It means nothing. Absolutely
right.
nothing. You know, anything that that lawyer has to say is hearsay. I object, Your Honor, hearsay. Whenever he gives the position of his client, well, my client said blah, 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 blah. I object, Your Honor, hearsay. Where's the client? Let the client get up here and get on the stand, put his hands on that Bible and swear to it. I haven't seen an affidavit. Where's his affidavit? Oh, well, Your Honor, I have an affirmation that I wrote concerning what my client has told me, and I have affirmed it. I object, Your Honor. Secondhand information means nothing. Throw it out. It means that it cannot stand in court. That man has got to get up there and speak. And if he doesn't get up and speak, then he is not rebutting it, and he loses. Now, the courts use the affirmation. They play all these smoke and mirrors. You got to understand this, not let it go by, and make a mountain out of everything. And every time they violate your unalienable rights and you object to this process and they move towards and look at it, they're moving towards a judge. If the judge is up there making a decision, you're in the wrong court. I object, Your Honor. What court do you think we're in? Because I know I opened a court of law. This is a court of record, but it seems to be are we chancery, Your Honor? And he refused to answer. He has a duty to answer, so he just answered when he didn't answer. You object. You write a writ of error. You file the papers, and then you sue the necessary people. You open another court to sue those necessary people. As this court continues, you need a new judge, which is really a magistrate, unless you want a judge. But you have a magistrate. You should be heading for a jury. And let me tell you, the jury, you can bring them to the jury. Well, look at, you know, jury, look at this, man. This guy has refused to rebut anything I have to say. He refuses to get onto the stand. Let's get this guy onto the stand. Let me ask some questions. Let him put his hand on the Bible and swear he's telling the truth, knowing that he can go to jail for perjury. Because he's claiming this stuff. His lawyer's claiming this stuff. I want him to say it out of his mouth. Let's hear it out of his mouth. And you call him to the stand. You see, that's what happened. They're not going to let you get to the jury to get to that point. You see, because the fix is in, because the lawyer always wins against the pro se. And if it's a corporation, then the lawyer that's backing up the corporation usually is the one that's going to win. It's all about settling accounts. It's horrific.
Yeah, well, on this, what happened, well, yeah, we got the transcript already from the first hearing. And, of course, the person was on the stand and lying. And, of course, you know, we're going to mark all the lies. But then, of course, when we go with the affidavit, on second week in March, and then of course they'll go on the stand again. Of course they're going to lie again. They will rebut it.
That's where, you know, there's not much more that could be said than that. The key thing is this: if you have a conversation long enough, and you go back and forth, and you ask questions, and if you're good at doing this kind of stuff, you will weed out the truth from the lie, because they will contradict themselves. Anybody who is bringing in a lie, if they think that they can get up before up people who know how to question people, and they think they can get up there and maintain that lie and keep that lie, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell them, because they're going to be found out. So the truth can be found out, but again, that takes an expertise of an individual being able to cross-examine someone.
Well, John, you said, I hope everybody's listening, because you just said the perfect thing. That's the other thing we're working on. Every single waking hour. The only reason I stopped was to be on this call. Listen, we've got hundreds of questions here. And here's the thing. When the judge is going to – we're even ready for the judge when he's going to say, how come you're asking all these questions? I'm going to say, the reason we're doing this is because for every single lie, we have to ask 20 questions.
Right.
Maybe 30, maybe 40. We might have 500 questions, because if we have 40 lies, we have to have hundreds of questions. So, see, you're so much on point. It's unbelievable. And you just did that just off the top of your head.
Well,
really.
You know, that's the backup to that. So.
And with that, I'm going to cut you off, because we got to get moving. We're quite a few minutes here. Okay?
God bless. I love you guys. And we'll talk next time.
Appreciate it. All right, Gerard, I'm going to pass it over to you for now. It's after 10:30. Once you take the next hour and a half, I'll listen in, and maybe I'll pipe in from time to time. Okay.
Okay. Okay, Pennsylvania Glory, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
I contact the Daniel Smith for the MMS issue, and I told them to get on the call.
Okay.
So they may do that. So I just want to let you know.
That's very good. We appreciate that. And, I mean, he should also call Eric so that he has those court watchers there. That's important.
Yeah, you know. I spoke to them. I'm in communicating with them since about December, and they're trying different methods, but it's not working, and the FDA is really targeting them. And I think this battle is American people versus United States government and their agencies trying to control all the pharmaceutical industry for their profit making, and they don't really care whether people heal ourselves using that anything that really doesn't have any side effect. And they are afraid the money making venture is not going to work for them. So this is a really a fight, between the American people versus U.S. government and the government agencies. And I think we should really go after the FDA, because
absolutely. So many problems, the FDA. Do you realize that the FDA, that the people that sit on that board are the ex-CEOs that take sabbaticals from the pharmaceutical companies, and they serve on the FDA? I mean, you talk about a conflict of interest. They're from SmithKline and Merck, and they take 2 years off, and they go serve on the FDA. Totally unconscionable, because obviously they're gonna push their own medicines through, and they're gonna make laws that affect their bottom line, their pocketbook, and that's what they're all about. And if this, I don't know this guy here with the MMS, if he's using lawyers, he's at a disadvantage. It's very hard to win these cases when you have a lawyer working, because they control the lawyers, and the lawyers are never as aggressive as you could be yourself if you're good in court, And I don't know what Brzezinski did, but he seemed to hold up pretty good in court. I know he spent a lot of time on the stand himself, so he probably won with the jury, because he was able to speak to the jury, which a lot of lawyers they don't want their clients speaking to the jury. And I don't know how articulate he is, but that's a big part. If he can articulate, then maybe he can win, But, having a lawyer is bad, because you're like fourth on his totem pole, so to speak. Anything else, Gloria?
Yes. So basically, we've been really being abused, and there are a lot of natural remedies developed by people, and then they just take all the stuff out of the shelves. And, they just want us to take all those medicine and die. So we really, really have to support these people that are fighting in court because of the FDA is coming after them, So we really should take an action.
Yeah, I agree, and it would be nice to be in the courts, because we could clean it all up at that point. Okay, I appreciate the input. Thank you.
So they will call in.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, bye. Massachusetts, Cynthia, you got the mic.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Good.
All right, I have a couple of questions. One,
I lost her. Hello? Are you there? Cynthia, you dropped out. Your mic dropped, or maybe your service dropped, I don't know. Well, I don't hear Cynthia. John, could you hear me? Am I still on? Hello? Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, you're coming through. I was in the other room. I had the mic.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I'm gonna go ahead.
He dropped. So it looks like she's still on, but she's not.
Yeah, it looks. I see her here, but I don't see her here. I'm gonna Cynthia. Just go back into the queue. I'm gonna go into the...
Yeah, we'll look for you.
Yeah, I'll go to the next caller. Okay, this is wireless caller, last numbers of 0891. Your mic is open.
Hey, Gerard. This Who's is Johnny this? Kansas.
Hey, Johnny. How you doing?
I had to get a new phone. I got my phone shut off last Thursday.
Yeah, I saw your email.
Yeah, all right, man. I'm almost
Losing Johnny, too. His new phone's not working too good here. Can you hear me, Johnny? I think we're having internet problems here. It sounded like you're having bandwidth problems there. Can you hear me, Major Johnny? Well, I guess I lost him, too. I hope it's not me. I see my mic working. I'm gonna get through the queue real fast like this. You get three words and you get dropped.
Yeah, we definitely can hear you, and yeah, that is the way to see, because that's what I do. If I'm wondering if I'm online, I look to see if there's any activity on my mic and
I see myself.
You know you're still on and they're not. You don't see them. If you see them moving and you're not moving, well, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go to the next one. Johnny, get back in if you want. I don't know what happened.
And anybody
there.
Else that wants to get into the queue, hit *6. Anybody on any of the radio programs listening in or live stream, if it's Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, between 9 p.m. Eastern and midnight, we're live then. The call-in number is 605-562-3140. The participant code is 385-698. Hit *6 to get into the queue. Go ahead, Gerard.
Okay, we got New York, Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
Hello. Is that me?
Yeah, we got you.
Sorry, that was my fault there. Yeah, I stepped up away from the phone for a second. Just real quick, a way you can beat that single-party recording restriction, which says, you know, apparently, supposedly you can't record the call without the other party's consent. Here's what I would do, and I do this occasionally with my calls. Set up your video camera, put it on a little tripod, you pick them up cheap secondhand, and just videotape yourself making the call. So it's not the other person, and you can just repeat stuff back. Oh, that was last Friday you said? Oh, okay, I got that. And you talk to them, and then as they say something, oh, what was that again? Oh, that was Wednesday at 4 o'clock, okay. And you write down, you can record the call that way. Just videotape yourself making the call, and without their voice actually coming through, you can get 90% of the gist of it that way and beat their single-party restrictions. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's almost like doing a video affidavit, you know? I think
exactly. And once again, you're not spying in on the call. You're just videotaping yourself making the call.
Right,
so
Just keep repeating what he says.
Or you could say to them, some of my conversations are recorded for quality purposes, and keep going. That was just humor. So.
No, right. But if you don't want to show your head, yeah, we'd just say that. Set up your little camera, videotape yourself doing the call, and I'm sure that would, you know, that they're not going to be able to get you that way. So anyway, it's just a nice little, kind of a thing you can use if you want to beat those restrictions. A creative way to get around the legal BS that comes out of Albany and Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you know, I had an interesting time on a call that, you know, it was with, I don't remember, like the electric company. And, you know, they always say the calls will be recorded, you know, maybe recorded for quality and all that. And,
right.
And I told the lady that I was on that the call that I was recording her, do you know she refused to speak to me?
Oh, then you're real squirmish. It's okay for the goose, but it's not okay for the gander.
I'm not allowed to talk to you. I said, oh, well, you could tape me, but I can't tape you. Something wrong with this picture.
different set of rules for them and us. Don't you love it?
Well,
okay, so
I kind of understand because they made her go get a supervisor. You know, look at they got a lot of low level people that could really stick their foot in their mouth. Probably they probably gotten in trouble with that one. You know.
Yeah, well, I'll say ultimately, though, the real true answer to all that is it's all for databasing. Every piece of information they can get, they can bounce it off their voice print data recognition and tie your voice to anything. And so everything's about database building. You'll see that everything is geared towards that because through the database, they can control you. And as a real insidious example of what the database can do, in the situation in Pennsylvania where the Kids for Cash, there's a movie you can watch on YouTube called Kids for Cash, and the son of a senior judge on the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court came into the town, Luzerne County, I guess it was, near Lackawanna. They built a 1,300-bed prison for children, and they paid the two judges, Mark Civarella and Michael Conahan, $2.8 million to lock up as many kids as they could. And, well, I mean, one girl got in an argument on Facebook, and she was in for like 3.5 years. Okay, one kid had a first offense fight in a classroom, 5.5 years, going on 6 years before he got out. Families were in tears, getting torn apart. The judges are getting kickbacks. They got caught. The judges went to prison. It's going on in every community in the country, and they were trolling the food assistance program at the cafeteria, at the schools for the underprivileged kids who couldn't afford to eat, were on the school lunch assistance program, and don't you know they were trolling those records to see who the poor kids were. They knew the parents wouldn't have enough money to fight back and hire a lawyer. Those were the kids they keyed in on and stole from their family and stuck them into prison for millions of dollars in kickbacks. So just to show you how the database can work against you, stay out of the system, stay out of the database as best you can. Obviously, you got to call customer service at the electric company once in a while. But, you know, at every corner where you can say, when they get you at Home Depot and say, can I have your zip code? Just tell them, enter the store code. Go to Radio Shack, what's your number or your zip? Enter the store code. Just stay out of the database as best you can because it will come back to bite you.
Yeah. I don't even like to use those cards to get the special discounts. I tell them, don't you have a card at the register? I'm paying cash.
Well,
I should get even a better price.
Read the book by Catherine Albrecht called Spy Chips, and she interviewed the CEO of Stop and Shop, and she said, why did you just spend $4 million upgrading your database for Stop and Shop grocery store chain? And he said, oh, because we're sharing the information on the Shoppers Club card with the HMO, the health maintenance organizations, so if they see you eat too much butter or you're buying a lot of beer that week, your health insurance rates are going to go up. Get it?
And not only that, what about your income tax? You're over there reporting income tax, and then they go around to all the areas. You think that Stop and Shop and Grand Union are not going to give the IRS the information of what you spent at the store that month?
Everything.
They're going to tell them in a heartbeat.
Sometime when we have 5 minutes, I'm going to read you. I won't do it now. I don't have it in front of me. The privacy policy for Amica Insurance. And you should hear the list. And they say it right in public on their annual statement. I've got one in my drawer somewhere. I can dig it up later. And it's a list of people that they tell you they're going to share your personal non-published information with. Auto mechanics, other insurance companies, any government agency that wants it. It goes on and on and basically everybody. So this is your private stuff that you've shared with your insurance company that takes care of your doctor's appointments, and your auto mechanic's going to know, you know, what kind of medications you take. I mean, it's absurd. So be careful what you sign and be careful about the database.
Well, listen, people are sheeple because, look, at even these pharmaceutical commercials, they give a whole 5 or 8 minute thing about what's going to fall off and dry up and fall off of your body if you take this medicine, and people still take it. You know what I mean? It's like, why would you want to do that to yourself? Anyway, very interesting.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a fool to knowledge, but you can't make him think. I'm going to sign off, and you guys get a hold of me if you need me.
Thank you, Eric. Have a
good
night. Yeah. Hey, this is Rick coming up. What's up, Rick?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
With all the documentation about depopulation and plans for martial law and Rex 84 and everything that's out there, I would think all this information could be compiled, as well as Big Pharma and the history of the AMA taking over in eliminating homeopathic drugs and why they have made hemp and cannabis illegal and pretty much everything they've done. I think we have a wide open case for collusion to commit genocide, mass murder, both past and present, for collusion, for RICO, so to speak. Like, we can connect all these dots with their own words. In other words, listen, let's take Bill Gates' own words. Let's take the words of Henry Kissinger. Let's take the words of all these people involved and just twist them and use them against them and say, okay, well, obviously you have a plan to depopulate. What exactly does that mean, depopulate? Are you talking about killing people? Because, you know, the evidence that we've uncovered from vaccines, big pharma, chemtrail, geoengineering, or whatever you're calling it these days, on top of the toppling of our constitutional rights, you're under arrest for collusion to commit mass murder and genocide. And let's add the news media in there along with that, because they've pushed this propaganda. I mean, once you guys get in the courts, there's no stopping it. It will go to war. It will go to physical war, because they are so deep in hell, in the crap, in their own collusion, conspiracy to commit murder.
If we get in, it won't go to war. They'll go to jail. Look, we outnumbered them 700-1. So don't let them psyops us. You know what I mean?
I was asking is basically, you know, can't we take their own documentation from New World Order plans, from the conspiracies they've already been involved in the past, and the fraud they perpetuated on 9/11? And,
look, there's a lot of good information out there right now. A lot of good.
Right.
I also heard that Bill Gates is due for trial. They got him up for trial in India for experimenting on the kids and sterilizing them without their permission. Now, of course, are they actually going to get him? The thing is he can't. He doesn't dare travel to India now, does he?
Right.
And I also heard that
within our own country's laws. You know, they don't have a right to spray us or use us as guinea pigs, and they are, and it's provable. These are the medications. I mean, these are the ingredients of certain medications. These are the people who've died from these medications. These medications are known. I mean, these elements that are within vaccines are known to be brain damaging, carcinogenic. I would think that we've got more than enough information to start indicting members of Big Pharma,
well,
the news media.
You just said the operative word, indicting. We can't indict anybody until we get into court. And actually, one of the biggest things we can do is start boycotting them by not using them. That's the biggest thing they're afraid of, and that's what hurts them the quickest. Look, you're talking about going into the evil court that empowered them in the first place. You're not going to get justice in there until the people are back in there. Forget about making a big suit, because they don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? It's like it says in the Bible. Why do you go to their courts looking for justice? Because the guy that's sitting there, that you're asking for justice, you got to get your tape measure out and measure his horns against the length of the guy that you're suing in the first place, because he's no better than they are. So until we get in there, until the people get in there to administer that justice, until we change our own attitudes as far as our godliness and our morality, we're going to be stuck with this stuff. And I truly believe that. So, listen, everybody knows they're bragging themselves about what they're doing. The biggest evidence we have is, like you said, all the stuff they write about themselves. But look, I want to get moving here. We got a couple more people. I got an unknown wireless caller here. I don't know. This looked like 1073, the last three.
All right,
so,
well, before you take that caller on, let me just make an announcement for those listening in on the live streaming. Monday between 9 and 12 is live, and if you're listening in live on the live stream, you can, if you have a question or a comment, you can call in. The number is 605-562-3140. The participant code is 385-698. When you get in, you hit *6 to get into the queue. And when it's your turn, you can ask your question or make your comment. Go ahead, Gerard.
Okay, 1073. Hey, Rick, get back in. I hit you by accident, so if you weren't done, I mean, I think we were pretty much beat that subject up, but if you got anything else, go back in. We got a wireless caller. I don't know who it is. It's 1073 is the last four numbers, and you are unmuted.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah. Who's
this? All right. Hey, this is Rod from Oregon.
Okay, Rod from Oregon. Gotcha.
Hey, I have hundreds of questions, but that's not why I called. I had a few comments I'd like to make, and let me start out with a quote, because I know you were mentioning, we're always talking about juries and all this type of stuff, but there's a quote, I don't remember who it was by, but it just goes, the power that the a-hole, which we call them here, administrative hearing officers, they're not really judges, but that's what they are, our acronym is a-hole, but the power of the a-holes and the prosecutor that has over the juries in direct proportion to the jury's ignorance. So you have, little chance half the time, and like you were saying before, anytime you get a bar attorney on your side, you're listed as totally incompetent right off the top, period. Mm-hmm. But in any case, what kills me is I hear all these euthanisms. And me, I'm writing a book on euthanisms. And if things keep going the way they are, I won't have to write a book. I'll just pull out the dictionary and I'll have a whole book full of them right there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what people call courts are basically, I call them dens of corruption, but what they basically are is we're dealing with the Roman amici courts of war, And we have all their minions that we call attorneys that are there to guard the blood and the gold and all the lust and everything of the money that these dens of corruption are generating to begin with. What people call government, in my opinion right now, I look at that as being a corporate fascist regime that we're living under right now. It's absolutely amazing. So when you take all these things and all these terms that we have, republic, person, citizen, statute, codes, ordinances, canons, gladiators, all taxes, all this stuff is legalese and insanity has been induced into our, psyche and how we, that's how they control all of us, is sheeple, basically. I'm thankful that a lot of people are waking up, at this point, and there are those, and just the calls that you're doing here, it validates the fact that there are people coming together. Hopefully it's not too late. And then when you get into the chemtrails, let me tell you one more thing, and then I'll give you back your time here. But I had a petition out I put out on the Internet on chemtrails. I wanted to see how many people were aware and alive or awake to these things. And I put it through all my database, everybody I knew. And it's been probably over a month or so now, and there's probably about 110 votes apparently on this petition I put out. It was about a month and a half ago, a petition came out. Somebody had a petition out to change the state bird here in Oregon to a duck. And within a week or two, there was literally thousands of votes on this petition. I mean,
well, I got an idea for you. What you got to do is you got to say, hey, the state bird, he's going to die in the chemtrails because these chemtrails are very toxic to that particular bird.
Well, no kidding. But, there's a lot more to this. When you interject the technology of the HARP technology and what they're doing, all these chemtrails aren't as about the metals that we're breathing, that we're putting in our lungs. You want to talk about mind control and what the top agenda is behind all this stuff. It's like living in the twilight zone on steroids.
Let me ask you a question there. Have you been doing some serious research and gathering your authorities from that research as you've been going along? Have you got a lot of information of that type with
you're
the necessary
about,
authorities?
You're talking
well,
about
yeah,
any of these things, whether it's the GMO, whether it's the pharmaceutical, the chemtrails, or whatever, it doesn't matter. Have you been researching this in such a way with the gathering evidence? Have you been doing it in that fashion? Do you have that kind of research going on?
Well, I have been compiling a bunch of evidence because right now I've got a commitment with one of the public officials here in Oregon that if I could present him with enough evidence about these chemtrails and what's really going on and the agenda behind it, he would jump on my side and go to bat and start working towards that.
Well, I want to second that from National Liberty Alliance also for the purpose of handing it over to the necessary people when the time comes. So if you've got that kind of things, you should connect with us, and maybe we can try to get a group together who wants to do those investigations, and maybe you might want to participate in that. But if that interests you, try to give me a call tomorrow evening at 845-233-6560.
What's that again?
Hold 845.
Okay, I've got 845-233-6560.
I should be at that phone number tomorrow evening.
Okay.
But, you know, if you don't catch me one evening, catch me yet next evening. You know, sometimes the kids pull me to go do something, and I come away from the computer. You're on Pacific time, right?
Yeah, I'm on Pacific time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 11 o'clock, 11, 10, 9, 8. You know, if you were to call me at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you should get me, you know. Well, no, you're early. What am I saying? Let me reverse that. You called me. If you called me at 9 o'clock, that's 10, 11, 12, 8 o'clock. If you called me around 8 o'clock, I probably should be in front of my computer because it'd be 11 o'clock. But you could try earlier than that if you wanted, because I might still be in front of my computer.
Okay, I'll definitely get a hold of you.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to give the call back because I know there's probably a lot of other
What's
people
waiting. What's your first name?
Rod.
Okay, Rod.
Okay.
To talk to you. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, you too, guys. Hey, thanks for everything you're doing, man. God bless.
Yeah.
Too, bye.
Okay, unknown caller. Looks like 0445 is the last four numbers. You are unmuted.
Oh, yeah, it shouldn't be unknown. Yeah, it just came up on that. Yeah, it's just me again. I just got back on the queue because, you know, way at the end, you know. Just, I wanted everyone to have a chance. Anyway, listen,
right,
I appreciate
anybody that asked a question and they want to come back when they can come back into the queue, just get back into the cycle. So,
right.
Go ahead.
I appreciate it. Listen, I appreciate everything you said before about that, and we're definitely going to work on those things. The only thing I was just concerned about is that in case it doesn't, you know, that's the whole thing. We don't trust the courts. That's the whole reason for this call. And for your whole, you know, the whole talk. So is it possible to challenge that law and call it unconstitutional? Here's just a little bit here. It's only 11 states that are requiring two-party consent. That means 39 states have one party. And also the federal law says it's one-party consent. But they're just allowing the states to make up their own mind, and 11 states decided to do the two-party consent.
Well, bear in mind now that down in a federal court, this now becomes legal. Okay, so
right,
even if you're in Connecticut.
Court.
So keep that in mind. And remember, look at
right.
Every case you take into court or get pulled into court for becomes a federal case if you understand what you're looking for. You have to navigate the jurisdiction, especially when you get into the federal side of things. You have to understand the jurisdiction that judge is sitting in, and you have to understand the jurisdiction that you opened, and you need to navigate between the two and make sure they understand the jurisdiction they need to operate under, and you got to put them into such a tight box that this guy can't do anything without getting himself into more trouble, which usually will pressure these people to make a decision, to push some kind of a conclusion to this with the other side, say, make a deal with these people. That's the pressure, and that's where you got to get to, because that's the only place you're going to get to. You're not going to win in court because they won't allow you to win anymore. It's just
right.
Not permissible. So if they feel threatened and if they feel that they just have to get this court case out of their court because they can't, they don't want to be put into this position here, then you've won because they'll push the other side.
Yeah. If there could be something to get this thing into federal court, and then, of course, that could lead to them be used.
Well, that's what John just said. He said you have to know how you can make a federal case out of it,
which
is very easy.
Yeah, let me ask you a question. Did they pull you in, and did they have a conference with you? How many conferences have you been to? Court conferences.
No, it was just It was one hearing. One hearing.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're not. You know you're not in a common law court now. Excuse me, Your Honor, what are we doing this hearing? I object to this process and procedure. It's not a common law hearing. Why are we here? Are we not in a court of record? Can you confirm that for me, Your Honor, that you understand that we are a court of record and you're to act as a magistrate? You cannot. That's the other thing. If the magistrate is making decisions, you're not in a court of record. He's acting as a judge. You're in the chancery court. I object, Your Honor. You don't have the power or the authority to make these decisions. We've done this in court. We've written papers telling him we've overruled them, telling him you don't have the authority. And now you got to overrule him with what's called a writ of error. You give him a writ of error. You rescind his decision. You overrule him. And then you file the necessary papers to sue that individual for violating your unalienable rights and bringing you into a foreign court. Because that's what they've done when they pulled you from one court to another. You got to understand this stuff in order to win in these courts.
Yeah.
So that's
hey, John,
the key. And it's not that difficult.
How hard is it going to be if the federal is one party? And the states the federal's one party and the state is two party. They're going to lose control of that because if you could take it in the federal court, now you're going to go by the federal rule, which says that one party's good enough, and you're going to win that the federal party.
Well,
right?
Whatever you can use. Remember, now you got two court cases going. You got a state court case going that a judge violated your unalienable rights with. And that's
right.
Why you take him into another court case, which is a federal court. You make a federal issue out of it. He no longer can listen on that case. So they got to get another magistrate. Instead, they put another judge there. Well, Your Honor, what are we doing here? I'm not understanding. I know what happened the last time, and I talked with him. He refused to answer. And I told him, please, you got to tell me what jurisdiction do you think we're in. I know I opened a court of record. I remember. After all, it says right here, I'm one of the people of whatever state that I'm in. And in this court of record, I am suing so on and so forth. So you see, Your Honor, we're in a court of record. I do not understand what we're doing here at this hearing. This is not according to common law and process and procedure. So please confirm what court are we in. Are we in a court of record? Are we in a chancery court under equity? Where are we? Okay. His refusal to answer is, again, a violation of your unalienable rights. You've been hijacked into a foreign court. You have to overrule, give him a writ of error and overrule. You know, we had one case with one court. The judge came in and walked in and said, I'm not making any – this is a second judge. I'm not making any decisions in this case. Let's move on with this case. We'll reschedule this case. Let's move it along. And they moved to the next case. Next time the guy went, they had another judge. That judge just didn't want to deal with it because of what he did to the judge before, you see? And they didn't want – now, they'll always find somebody who's willing to throw themselves under the train here. But
yeah.
Let me tell you something. If you hold to your what you got to do and you keep the process going accordingly, you're going to keep removing these people out of your way until you get someone who's finally going to say, settle this case to the other side. Because they're not going to rule on your end.
Remember when we took our jurisdictionary course, the teacher said, when you write your case, you always write it with the idea that you're appealing it. You're writing it for the appeal court. Now, I think if you conduct yourself in that manner, that judge knows that you're not going to go away. You're going to appeal it if you don't win in his court. So I would think that he would want to do something with you down there where he has somewhat of a control over you. Rather than than send you upstairs where there's no guarantee to what could happen. You know, actually, he doesn't know that they won't even sanction him after you get up there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if you conduct yourself in such a way, and I think that's why I won my case when I told the judge, look, he asked me what I was going to do, and I said, this is a cheap education for me, Your Honor. I'm going to keep going to every court that I can go to. I'm enjoying this. Well, he ruled against the other side. He probably said, I got to get rid of this guy, you know. I think they know that if you're determined, you know, that I think they're a little bit, they deal with you a little differently. Like, don't forget, most people go in with a lawyer, they got full control over the lawyers, they can push you around. You know,
right.
If you're in there as your own person, you know, and you're talking competently and you're doing your case so that he understands by the way you're writing and the way you sound that you're actually preparing it for appeal, I think you'll have a lot better luck with that judge, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
that
judges actually end up liking you if you do a nice case and you're respectful and you put and you conduct yourself a certain way. A lot of times they get sympathetic.
No, that's excellent advice. No, absolutely. No, thank you.
Yeah.
On that, just one last thing. As far as because as like I said, the things you're saying, it falls right into the solid foundation of jurisdiction, like
right.
You can keep all of them, and then trying, you know, to get, you know, them to commit either way. But now, just as a side thing, with that, the two-party consent, and I'm talking about, and here's the thing, with that two-party, and I'm talking about just a conversation. This is not even a phone thing. See what I mean? So it's not even like as if you're using the phone line. So this is
It doesn't matter, I don't think. It doesn't matter.
Right, and you're right. In other words, but I'm just trying to say that's even less of a
right.
thing.
It's not a wire fraud thing. It's two people talking to each other, right?
That's what I'm trying. So that's even, but even that, of course, as you just mentioned, of course, that's covered too, because they call it, you know, when you look up the law and the federal law of one-party consent, it's the phone, or they call it an in-person conversation, and that's how they designate it. But do you feel, both of you feel, that is any a state or any entity that is forcing a two-party consent, do you feel that's an unconstitutional law by the state?
Well, I don't think it's right, because if you're in the conversation and that you can't tape it, absolutely, I think it's unconstitutional. I think it's violating your right to protect yourself. It's violating your right to protection.
Let's look at it logically. If that other person has nothing to hide, why are they so worried about the conversation being recorded?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like they're planning on screwing you with that law. This law says that if you get anything good on us, we're not gonna let you use it.
Exactly. And think about what if now, Gerard? What if it's something serious? Maybe it's your nephew or something, and now he's in trouble for a stabbing. And this tape will clear him. And
well,
now,
listen, like I said, law enforcement uses one side conversations all the time to get people.
Yeah.
Indicted. So I don't see how they could actually, you know, how that would hold up. And like John said, what you got to do is you got to make a federal case out of it and bring it up to the federal, because look at the federal rules say one person's good enough. And like John says, you don't have to look very far. You don't even have to make it be that he violated your constitutional rights with this two-party system, because the federal court might feel like they're stepping on the state rights. All you got to do is say he drugged me into a foreign court. Forget about the tape thing. Get it in the federal court. Reintroduce the evidence. I got this tape. Oh, yeah, you do? Okay, let me see. Boom, boom. End of story. Now, the judge has got to be pretty stupid if he doesn't see that coming.
Right. Now, I got you. No? Right. Right. Of course. And we haven't made any issue yet on the tape, of course. So you're right.
There's one other thing you can do. Okay, you can come to New York to make your phone call to Connecticut. make sure that you document that well. Maybe put a video camera on you as well as the microphone on the phone, and then you can stand on Article 4, Section 1, full faith and credit, and they can go to hell.
Well, I can see you did your homework. You know that
John's
you are
like a lawyer, isn't he?
Like you,
excuse me, a lawyer? What are you doing? You shouldn't be cursing me in public like that.
Like a Kentucky lawyer, just go to New York and make the call. I love it.
We're close by. We're not far from you. The boy is
take
not
a ride.
Come on,
it's worth it,
come
right?
on over. The weather is nice and cold here too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. We're almost going to be zero tonight, everybody.
Yeah,
zero.
I hear you. Well, I let you... was out and didn't go down. It was 18 degrees just before the sun went down.
Yeah, like -2 at about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you go to the next caller.
Okay.
Thanks. And thank you, Gerard.
Call,
and
thanks.
Okay. Okay, we got... wireless caller 0891, last four numbers.
Johnny B again.
Yes.
Yeah, did I get a call ago?
You just disappeared, Johnny. You were like, you kind of had like a bandwidth problem. You got kind of wobbly, and then you just disappeared.
It's my new service provider. It's going to be a challenge and a half.
Yeah,
I just wanted to raise.
Well, let me tell you that, and for anybody else that doesn't know this, if you go out to nationallibertyalliance.org and you do click on our weekly call tab on the top left side, right above the blue bar on the top left side, you'll get instructions on how to join us. And one of the ways to join us, right on the top, you can click on the telephone to dial using your browser. So if you have a mic and a headset, you know, or a mic and speakers, if you want to just listen, you can listen that way. If you got a mic and you want to talk, you can listen and talk. You get a little dialer, and then you get a. And if you want to get into the queue, the dialer stays there, and you click the 6, it'll put you into the queue, and everything else. So you don't have to use your phone. For those people having problems with phones, or they're using cell phones and they don't want to keep it up to their ear, or the batteries go out, I mean, you know, just go onto your browser and come in through your browser. Or listening through one of the radio programs that are streaming us.
3 hours on a cell phone is tough. I don't know how people do it. But anyway.
Yeah, I would.
My headset ain't worked since you called me on the Skype, Bart.
Make the investment in your headset, then.
No, it ain't my headset, dude.
1995.
John blew up your headset, huh?
It's in my audio side of my computer.
He's already breaking up.
Yeah, I know. I can hardly hear him. Yeah, you probably got a problem in your audio side because that's exactly what's happening.
Well, he's also a wireless caller. You know, those little birds up there are moving a little bit and they're exchanging, shaking hands and all that stuff, you know?
Right.
Well, the main thing I wanted to do, guys, was ask everybody out here in NLA land to get a hold of friends and family in New Mexico and Oklahoma. We need bodies.
New Mexico and Oklahoma.
Yeah, please. We need voices.
Yeah.
I'll die out and work on this thing.
Yeah. Okay, Johnny. It's a penance to listen to you tonight.
Cynthia's back, too. Hopefully we'll be able to keep her online. She's next.
You got anything else, Johnny?
No, I'll let you go. I yield.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk to you again. Cynthia, are you there?
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call again.
No problem.
I got cut off. I'm so sick of this. I'm tampering on my phones,
Cynthia, if you're having a problem with your phones and it happens often and you don't want to be on the phone, use the browser to call it next time. You know, your internet browser.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Yeah, just come in on to join from on a Monday night call, you know, weekly call information, and just click on that phone there and dial in. It gives you We give you the details on how to do it. It's very simple. It's just like calling in on any other phone. You get a dialer on browser and dial it.
Okay. All right. So I just have a question about, you know, you're talking about equity courts and common law courts, and you mentioned chancery. Now, chancery is different than equity. I guess I'm trying to get all these different categories.
Right, yeah. What you need to understand is that what they did is back in 1789, and that's a very important year. That's the year that the Constitution was finally ratified and President Washington became President of the United States. That very same year, they didn't waste any time. The legislators came out with what's called the Judicial Act of 1789. And in that Judiciary Act, I think it's in Section 15, if I recall, they gave the legislators gave more power and authority to the judicial system, allowing them to proceed according to chancery law. Now, chancery law is a man-made process. It has nothing to do with natural law. The whole thing is statutory in order to control the people. People want to be king and lord over everybody. So that's what that's all about. And chancery law has been, you know, you'll read about it, of course, in Black's Law and so on and so forth. Generally, the chancery will often run underneath equity or with equity procedures. Now, equity procedures are to do a righteous, you know, process is what's supposed to be taking place. You know, righteous decision, doing truth and honor and all that stuff. I mean, that's what they talk about, but they don't do it. Now, there's no constitutional control on that in general. But in here in the United States, our founding fathers spoke and talked about this. As a matter of fact, if you listen to the Anti-Federalist Papers, that was one of the things that they did bring up concerning Chancery. And Chancery is something that we, the people, did not want. It was already in America because England was using it, and of course England was ruling us at that time. Mm-hmm. And but when we did the Revolution and we wrote the Constitution, we very purposely left Chancery out. And one of the amazing things, because of equity is a good system if you can get righteousness. So what? Right. Where do you have, but our founding fathers were pretty good with this. When they wrote it up and they figured this out, they said, well, okay, you know, first of all, in there are two processes. There's court of law and court of equity. Now, the court of law has only magistrates. No judges rule in a court of law. Judges only rule in courts of equity. Mm-hmm. So when our founding fathers put the Constitution together and they wrote up Article 6, that's mm-hmm. where they sealed it up. They said all judges, now judges rule in equity courts, all judges are bound by this supreme law of the land right there in Article 6. So it was made, mm-hmm. what happened for the first time in history, as far as I understand, I've never seen any place else, mm-hmm. but for the mm-hmm. first time in history, America actually took and put equity under common law procedure and process and a constitution. So now it's controlled by the Constitution, which means these judges must obey. And there you can hold them liable if they don't obey. And we're going to talk a little bit about, maybe probably about that next week. We'll bring up a paper concerning
these now, things. Is all of this different from admiralty law?
Now, admiralty law is totally, it has no place on land at all. Admiralty law is at sea. The maritime law has nothing to do with what we're doing. But they play their game, you know, and they play their district games. One of the things they did, and they established it in the judiciary, in the Judiciary Act of 1789, they did talk about districts. They broke up districts. Back in those days, there were 13 districts. But that was sort of a lead-in, and that's what the Constitution talked about, districts, but it was judicial districts, and that was a lead-in, okay, for them to start to move from judicial districts to the District of Columbia. So what they try to do, and the game they try to sell you, is that you live in the District of Columbia, in the federal district of whatever court system you're sitting in. There are 94 districts, you're in one of them, and they're claiming that that federal district is the District of Columbia, and they make this game up. It's all make-believe. It's fiction. It's they're acting as if they're reality, and they're going to get away with it as long as we let them. The fact of the matter is it's very clear on paper, very easy argument to make. You can lay it right out. We're laying it right out. The papers we wrote that are up there on the website that we read today lay it all out. You know, courts that resist the Constitution lays it right out very clearly. But particularly the jurisdiction, United States district courts, are Article III courts, every single one of them. They build on this, giving themselves more power. You know, they go to the other, they go to the Organic Act of 1871, which kind of sealed the deal on them. And that, at that point, is when they really started to get out of control, little by little, until we're where we're at today. I mean, it's almost like you can't get out of these people's claws,
right.
But you can, and we will.
Right. Now, you know, as a, you know, a person, and you end up in some kind of court or something, I mean, are you supposed to know, like, what kind of court these people are doing over there? Or you know, out of fairness or disclosure, you know, if you get into, like, commercial law?
Well, look, there's a state.
Like, what kind of court they are? You know, so you
let's start off from the basics. You know, people will say, you know, lawyers will say particularly, only a fool will represent themselves. Well, the fact of the matter is only a fool will hire a lawyer. Nobody can understand your case better than you. Nobody can argue and articulate your position better than you. And your case and your position should be about the facts. You shouldn't have to be going playing with all these legal things and having to look this stuff up in order to force the judge to obey what common law is all about. See, common law is cut and dry. It's bound under principle and logic and absolutes. And they look at the facts, and they make a decision off the facts. And you know what? The law, what is the law going to tell them to do? What do we care about the law? We want to know common law, which are principles. They are facts and truths that cannot be denied.
Right.
They're called maxims. okay? And so a maxim, for instance, is for every injury there must be a remedy. That's a requirement under common law. In order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. That's a requirement under common law. So those are the principles. They're very simple. They're easily understood. They're agreeable by everybody. Nobody disagrees because it's too logical. It's too obvious.
Right.
You see, once you're based on that kind of a thing, okay, and now you're down to the facts, you're to the nitty-gritty. What went wrong? Did you hit him or not? Did that guy see you do that? Did you do this? Did you steal from there? Did you stab somebody? You know, you work out the things and the witness, and you figure it out. And you get to the end, okay, well, every case is unique and on its own. And the people get to decide what that punishment is going to be. And basically, the restitution, in common law, restitution is the focus. In other words, what can we do to have this person restored? And whatever that takes, that's the punishment for that person. Now, that person still may require incarceration because it could be a violent situation that took place. But every jury has to figure that out for themselves. And therein is the principles. We act as jurists in a sense of honor, with a sense of justice, and with a sense of mercy. And every decision made under those three principles will be the best decisions that people could make. And if any of the other fellow jurists go outside of those principles, it's the duty of the other jurists to turn around and say, what are you doing? We have to consider mercy. You know, what are you doing going this way? Are you prejudiced or something? You know, because it becomes obvious the person that's creating the problem. And the jurist will have to correct that. But it's the jurist's job to figure this out, to make sure things are done. And they decide if there's a punishment, whether the person is guilty, what the restitutional requirements will be, and how it's going to work out. That's their job. The judge has nothing to do with it. The legislators have nothing to do with it. They can take their statutes and they can put them back up into Congress.
Okay. So they could actually be running some kind of admiralty court, but you're sitting there and you don't know it. Because they don't.
They are running. Look, at you go into any court, you'll see the fringes. They are running under admiralty. They've really combobulated this thing, but it's still admiralty controlled under chancery. You got to understand they're settling accounts, and it's all about business. It's all maritime.
Right.
And they brought it onto the land. This is all a fiction. It's fraud.
Yeah.
It's unconstitutional.
It's so bad,
shown on paper, and you got to stick to your guns and press the issues and put everyone to where they have to be put as you move down the line. Let me tell you something. If you give these people, once you're in the game, once your skin is in the game, you want to get in the game immediately. And once you give them one little chance, one little favor, let them slide just one time, they're going to take you down. You don't let nobody get away with anything the moment you walk into a courtroom. You need to hold their feet to the fire and press it to the hilts. And you need to know how to do that. For every individual gets up there, that takes you into a different jurisdiction, violates your unalienable rights under the color of law, you need to take that person down. That becomes a personal thing in another courtroom, not in the courtroom that you're in. That courtroom stays there, but you take those people out of the courtroom by bringing them into another courtroom. And that's how you win a case.
The flip side of that is they never put you in a different jurisdiction that you don't consent to. They have to get your consent. And just simply answering a question about something can be considered consent. You have to be very careful.
That gets me so outraged, just that whole tricks and all these little things, like you'll say a word.
Claim word magic, and that's why Bill Thornton said, when you go to court, if you're not really good at playing the footwork, it's like entering a dance contest and not knowing the steps. You got to know the steps.
You know,
if you don't know the steps, then you have no business being there. So what you do is you do like he says, and you say, you just say, I object, because you know it's not right. And if he says, well, why? You say, it's not my wish, because you're going to take care of it in your paperwork. You see, your paperwork is written in stone. You know, you can't take it back on paperwork, and they can't. But when you go in there and you talk, and he got you sticking your foot in your mouth, then it's on record, and it doesn't matter what your paperwork says, because now you went in and you've changed whatever you've given consent. So that's what it's about. I mean, you have to really study, and you have to, you know, be careful that you're not hanging your hung by the tongue, is what they say. You know what I mean?
So
that's the main thing.
Let me just add this in here. Anybody who took jurisdictionary, Okay. Anybody who took jurisdictionary, which jurisdictionary teaches you how to write a court case, and anybody that has learned how to write a court case, there are certain criteria and requirements in every court case, and you know, you end up with what's called the wherefore clause. The wherefore clause must be very precise, exactly what it is that you're seeking and what you're expecting the ruling to become. And but one of the very first things that you do is you establish the thing you do on a court paper when you write a court paper is you establish the jurisdiction. That's your first paragraph. And in that paragraph, you're not only establishing your jurisdiction, you're also accepting all of the oaths and bonds of every officer in that courtroom. And if they don't have an oath and they don't have a bond and they don't talk up right away and they remain silent, then they're guilty of fraud if they don't have one, because they now have a duty to speak, and they didn't speak, you got them. So that's a second thing. But you also want to make sure the next thing that you have to put into your paperwork, the second thing, which is a couple of paragraphs, which is jurisdiction. You want to establish the jurisdiction, and that's where you get these guys. And if people who understand how to write these court cases and they read this jurisdiction paper that we put up there, which is 2 pages, it's talking about the Article 3 courts, okay? You take these paper and you can add to it and take away whatever you want to do. It's your case. But the thing is you're establishing right on paper, making it absolutely crystal clear that you understand the jurisdictions and the jurisdictions that they try to play with, especially in the federal courts, but also in the state courts. And this is the jurisdiction you're coming into, and forever hold your peace, because this is where we're at. This is the court I opened, and here is I'm coming in here for cause and for a lawful remedy, and you are going to be held. They need to understand, when they read this, they will understand, that you're holding their feet to the fire, and I'm ready to take you out. You see, the guy that taught jurisdictionary, he said, when you go into a court, put your axe over your shoulder and just get ready to swing. You don't take no prisoners. You take toes off. They put their fingers out. You take their fingers out. You don't care if it's the judge or the other side. You just take them out. You better be careful taking the judge's fingers.
Well, a lot of us are learning all about this now. It's like a major learning curve. But for those of us who are caught up in the legal system and down the road of the whole process and discovering that something's really wrong and now, trying to play catch-up, can you flip it back or try to get it turned into common law in the middle of it or what?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It should have been common law. It should have been common law from day one. The Constitution says so. When they took you out of being in common law, they took you into a foreign court. They just kidnapped you, and they're doing with you as they please.
It's fraud.
And
it's
all
fraud.
Of a sudden, exactly, it's fraud. But all of a sudden, you wake up, and it doesn't matter whether you wake up after the court case or after you've done your time and come out of jail. It doesn't matter when you woke up and you say, whoa, wait a second here. I have just been defrauded. And they took – I had a right – my constitutional right, to actually my unalienable right, protected by the Constitution, to have due process. These people, under the color of law, wearing some kind of black robe cape, coming in here, and they just kidnapped me and took me into this jurisdiction. Well, you go out after these people, and you get your axe, go in and take them down.
Okay. All right. So you can move for dismissal based on wrong jurisdiction.
Well, look at you can wake up and write your papers correctly and turn it around and say, I just woke up and just come to realize what's going on here. And let me tell you, I'm going to fix it right now. You know what I do? Look at any time anybody comes out after me or anything they do or whatever the case may be, they call themselves the plaintiff. That's okay, because I'm going to turn them around, and they are not the plaintiff. I call them the plaintiff in error. They now become the defendant. I am the plaintiff in fact, because you see, they opened up a court in a chancery court, has no authority, no power over me. So I'm returning the process that they're trying to hijack me into some foreign system, and I come out and sue them as the plaintiff in fact, and that's how my papers works written from that point forward. They're the defendant. I'm the plaintiff, and you've got to take the upper hand in the case.
Right.
Listen,
okay.
I want to move on, but I want to say something. What you need to do, what people need to do, is they really, really need to go and listen to the common law tapes with Thornton, because he really distills down what it means to be in that court of record. Until you understand what that court of record is, you're going to have trouble staying in it if you don't know what it is. And the other thing that I'm going to bring this back to is the common law grand jury. All these little manciations that we're doing here, most of them will become not necessary once we're in the courts. Once you have common law running the courts, they're not going to be dragging you into all these crazy different jurisdictions. That's going to all be done. And, you know, that's one of the reasons they're going to fight us real hard, because that's how they make their money. Look at it, and that's how they get people in jail. And who was that judge, John? He said 90% are in people are in jail because they open their mouths. And I thought that was a very good lesson.
Yeah, that was Judge Bork.
Yeah, so.
And he said that back in the 80s.
Right, that's a good lesson. So, you know, most of the time you're your own worst enemy, you know. And, yeah, you got to play catch-up. But like John says, you can catch up at any time. So, you know, and what I would do is I would get with the court watchers. If you're in court and you got a case, that kind of quells them from doing anything too terrible because they're being watched. And the other thing is get with some people and do a study group. Take the jurisdictionary course. I mean, it takes time, but you know, you find somebody that really understands court procedure, they can help you, you know. But anyway, we're going to move to the next question here, because we've got maybe just enough time to get through everybody that's in the queue right
17
now.
17 minutes.
Yeah, I don't know. We have to try. Okay, give me the truth. Let's go.
Hey, my name's Mark. I'm in Orlando, Florida, administrator here for the NLA Common Law Grand Jury. Anyhow, my question was, I'm just starting to learn about these writ of mandamus, because I served one on our supervisor of election, Bill Cowles, here, because he didn't have a surety bond or an oath to office.
Mm-hmm.
So I served, and I interviewed him about 3 weeks ago, and I was just stalling and sending emails. Nothing was happening. Well, last Friday, I whipped that on him, and in 15 minutes, he found his surety bond and also his oath of office. Just boom, just
so,
like that.
So, yeah. What was the date on it? It wasn't brand new, was it?
Well, no. It came back. But here's my my question is, does everybody have to have a surety bond if they work for the government?
Anybody
yes.
elected or appointed must have
yes.
a surety bond.
Okay, because right. what he whipped on me was in 1989, the Florida House and Senate issued a bill that said it was optional. They don't have to do it anymore.
Well, it's okay. So if it's optional, then his house gets put up. He's got to make an income statement.
He must make a statement concerning his estate every year as he's in office, and he's got to update that every year. That's the law.
Okay, where
so
can
it
I get...
is true. It is true. If they got millions of dollars in assets and they don't want to take out a bond, they're good as long as they reach the necessary goal. And you have to figure out what the bond requirements are. Like if they got to be bonded for $5 million or $100 million, well, then they have to have the assets to back that. Other than that, they better go get themselves a bond. and that is the law.
Okay, where can I get some backup on that? Because I might just serve him another writ of mandamus and say, nah, you got to
well,
have
you
a
can
bond.
Start, you can start in the Constitution, reading the Constitution very carefully and start looking at the acts and different things attached to that. And that's where, remember, you know, the Constitution, it doesn't seem to say much, but it really does, and is very specific. But what it does, it gives authorities, you know, it says for the legislators to be able to go out and write out the details of this. For instance, the inferior courts and all the necessary offices for those courts, the legislators can set them up. Now, they had to run within a criteria. They created an officer, a law enforcement officer, equal to that of the sheriff, with all the authorities, the powers, and the inability of anybody to take this person out of office, because they're the law enforcement officer, and only the people can take them out. So at least we were stuck with it. We were in a situation, at least we had enough people inside the legislators to maintain the common law perspective, at least in the beginning, and really almost all the way up to the end. We've got a lot of great court cases. We've used them all the time. Got a few poor ones, but basically mostly good ones, and we use them all the time. And
okay.
The only court cases that appear as law really is the decisions of the United States Supreme Court. Now, bear in mind now, you know, you have a court system within your state. You have a Supreme Court and whatever they call it, and then you have the appellate court and the Court of Appeals. Usually there's two appellate systems set up. That's what we have in New York. And so you can get all the way up. Now the Court of Appeals, which is the highest court, that's the seven kings up north here in Albany, and they make final decisions. Their decisions really rot. I mean, they're horrible, okay? But nevertheless, they make these decisions. Now, I never use, occasionally I do use a court case out of New York, but generally I don't. You know, the reason why is because you got to remember, they all act completely under equity and with no acknowledgement of the United States Constitution whatsoever. I mean, they really, oh, that's a federal law, it has nothing to do with us. You see, that's the game they play. So every decision that they make ultimately is null and void and irrelevant and doesn't hold to a hill of beans, in my opinion, and I'd make that argument. I think I could win it. I know I can win it. But the key thing that you want to bring in is kick their butts with the United States Supreme Court, because for everything that they come up with which is wrong, the United States Supreme Court has already come out with which was right and corrected those kind of problems. So it's out there. But the Constitution itself is the most powerful document, particularly the Bill of Prohibitions, which is the Bill of Rights. That's your big club right there.
I know, but is it? Can you direct me any particular place or anything, or you know?
Well, yeah.
Look it.
If you really want to figure these things out, you go to nationallibertyalliance.org. You go to books, essays, and lectures. You take our civics course to begin with. You go to books, essays, and lectures. We have law notes in here. We have court access course, which teaches you how to write the papers and stuff. And so you can take those things. You can take jurisdictionary. And the key thing is really focusing in on the subjects that we bring up every week in the beginning of our program. We try to be focused, at least more now than we have in the past. But get out to that media page, because in my opinion, that's some of the most powerful stuff is right here on the media page, which is the court filings. Read the papers that we have filed or in the process of filing. We wrote a writ of quo warranto. We wrote the information for bills of exchange, and we wrote a mandamus to the sheriff. Now, that's got a lot of stuff that people can use in their own court cases. There's a lot of decisions that are made in their laws, U.S. Supreme Court decisions. Right below that, we have a court of law, the makeup of the court of law. And the most important one, I think, right here is the one we spoke about tonight, the U.S. District Courts, Article III courts. Take that paperwork right there, and you now got your jurisdiction. Curtail it around your case. And the judge, but remember, the judge, you got to really work on this, because when you walk into the courtroom, the judge may think, well, maybe someone else wrote this paperwork, maybe he got it offline, and he'll start testing you and playing. And if you can play chess with this guy, he's going to start worrying about you. Okay, mm-hmm. He can't play chess, and he sees that you're really a beginner at this. They're gonna steamroll you over. They just wait for the right opportunity, then they turn the steamrollers on, and you're done.
Yeah. Okay. And then also, John, you and I talked about 3 weeks ago. Ben Swan came into Orlando and had an interview. But you didn't miss a whole lot because it was so short. You know, it was only about, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes. So anyhow, we put in a lot of plugs for NLA. Okay, I guess that's it. Yeah, so it worked out pretty good. And he'll be having a show on activism, and he'll be mentioning the NLA in it.
All right, great. Yeah, if they want to consider simulcasting, let's ask them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
now,
we've got
four stations now. We've got three running today. Next week we're going to have four. And we'll hope to get more and more as we go on. We need to get around the nation. We need to get to these other groups that are working together, and they need to understand what we're doing and to see how those groups can come in to do what we're doing as the people right there where they live, that we can empower them.
And also, are you Ben Swan tried to follow me into the Orange County Courthouse, and naturally they wouldn't allow any cameras in there.
Uh-huh.
But shouldn't they be allowed to have cameras in
Absolutely.
There?
Absolutely. Get a hold of Eric next time, and he can help go through
Eric?
The necessary steps. Eric, yeah. Anybody going to court, they should join. Once they join National Liberty Alliance, there'll be an area called groups, and you come into the groups, you highlight groups, and there's the courtroom observers groups. Anybody that is dabbling in the courts needs to join that group. And even if you're not dabbling in the courts, you want to be active. You want to go listen to some cases in your area. You want to be helpful in your area. Just join that group. And you never know. You may be the target and you may need the people in the courtroom observers group to come help you to be at your court case, to videotape and to audio tape, and to be there as a witness and to intimidate. You get 20 people in there sitting, or 5 people, or 3 people, and they're sitting in there, and every time that judge opens their mouth, they raise their pens and pencils and start writing. Let me tell you, that intimidates the hell out of the judge. So okay, that's what you want to do. And so connect with the courtroom observers groups. That's run by Eric. Once you click in there, you go to see Eric's name. I think I know it, but I don't remember.
I think it's Jones, but he's up on the site under.
Yeah, just go click on Eric. Eric is.
Yeah,
good enough.
Has contact information.
Eric is good
there.
Enough. Click on Welcome Read First page, and in there gives you the contact information to Eric. He's online right now. He might even pipe in before we end.
Right. You know, he's in the queue if we can get to him. And one of the
but
things Eric
in any
does
event,
is,
just so you know, we got 13. We don't have 13. 7, 8, 9. 2, what do we got? 12 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, Eric usually lets them know ahead of time, the judge, and he gives them the law. You know, when you pop it in on them at the last minute, they don't cooperate.
I'm sorry, we have 8 minutes. Just so you know,
okay, Donald, Michigan, Donald, you're all.
Hey,
go ahead.
How you doing?
Good,
Donald. Don Levine here, Oakland County Coordinator, Michigan Common Law Grand Jury, also Michigan de facto President of Michigan Chapter of the Oath Keepers. Just a couple of quick items. One is I registered a court case. I have a hearing March 5th coming up, and I registered on there for court observers about a week ago, and I haven't heard anything back about that. So
call Eric. Go back out and call Eric. He may be overloaded.
Yeah.
Okay.
His number's out on welcome.
And it's welcome March 5th, and where is it?
It's in the Eastern District in Michigan in Detroit.
Eastern District, because you're announcing it right now. Anybody in the Michigan Eastern District, March 5th, what time?
March 5th, 2 p.m. I think the address is 231 Lafayette Boulevard.
Okay, well, Eric will probably put a blurb out. Make sure you get a hold of him, but you just did put a blurb out just now, so that's a good thing.
Okay, what's the phone number I'm supposed to call?
Well, I don't know it offhand, but it's on that tab there, Eric's number.
Okay.
For court observer, yeah, it's right there. And
okay,
I would definitely give him another call so he can get an email out so people can have that address in writing, and they'll show up maybe.
Okay?
Okay.
All right. So real quickly, this just came across the Oath Keepers Hotwire today, and it may have some impact on us here, so I just want to announce it on February 26th. Barack Obama's Federal Communications Commission will vote on a measure that is essentially a power grab for the Internet. There is a 332-page FCC document that the public is not allowed to view. However, they will hold their vote, and on that day it will be voted as to whether or not Barack Obama will control the Internet, will eventually affect controlling online content. So, everybody
right,
that's
well, two things. Real, hold on. If you've got basic information on that, get a hold of Eric, and Eric and you and me should have a conference call on this. We should discuss it. This is something we need to know about. We need to know that date, and we need to do a paper on that. Eric, you've been unmuted, but bear in mind we only got 5 minutes left. Eric,
John,
you want to hype it a little bit?
I'll make it brief. I've been real busy trying to help people keep their homes here in New York, so I'm sorry I didn't get back to you on that. Always call me. Don't rely on the email posting to get through to me. Sometimes I have a little trouble with my email. So under all kinds of sabotage, and things don't always work well in the electronic realm, so pick up the phone and call me. The number is 585-785-7730-9220.
585-730-9220.
Correct. And it's all posted up there on the bulletin board. So if you just read through, you know, the first couple of documents on the Courtroom Observers Group bulletin board, the number is there as well. So it's publicly posted for anybody who wants to call. And I'll give it back to you, John. So get a hold of me soon, and I'll get us something going for you, help you get cameras in the courtroom, put out a call for some observers.
Okay. And then, John, the information about the 26th, and the vote. I sent that in an email to John at National Liberty Alliance. It's coming from D. Levine at Yahoo, so just make sure
when
you look.
When did you send it?
Pardon?
When did you send it?
Tonight.
Just now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
I'll look for it.
Just came across our hot wire, so during the call tonight, I sent it to you.
Well, look, bring this up to Eric and remind Eric that I'm interested in looking into this deeply, and let's get a conference call with Eric, you and me, and anybody else that may have knowledge of this. Let's talk about it.
I never
we'll
heard of
it. We'll create a committee on this.
They got a bill that we're not allowed to see. That's ridiculous. How can they?
Yeah,
do
we're
going to
talk about that too. Anyway, minutes left.
Okay. All right, I'm gonna move ahead, Donald. Arizona Bill, go ahead. If you're there,
I don't have a. Hi, this is Bill Davis from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah.
I don't have a question, but I have some information I wanted to pass on about what happened here in Maricopa County Law Library. They have sold, basically without our knowledge, $2 million. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Keep going. I'm just letting them know. 3 minutes left. We
$2 million. $2 million worth of law books dating back to the 1600s for $600. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is I would like you guys to repeat this every week so that people go out into their law libraries to make sure that they don't lose their law books. We have lost every one of ours.
Wow, for $600?
Yes.
Wow. Boy, if we had known, we'd be there buying them.
2 minutes left.
I'm done, but this needs to be repeated so that people go out and scour. They got to be constantly on the ball because this happened without our knowledge.
Yep, that's what they do. Yep, which is
illegal. We have no books. We have no books going back at all. It's all electronic, and the electronic stuff can be changed at whim.
Yep,
so,
that's true.
Anyway,
yep.
I'm done, and
Thank you, Bill. That's
the warning, and I hope you get the message out to all the NLA people.
Thank you. Okay. Dave Lawson. Yeah.
I'll try to be brief. I'm brand new to this group. I'm from New York. My name
1 minute left.
Yeah, I just wanted to reach out to my New Yorkers. I have a bankruptcy case, and I'm not sure whether I should be dealing with equity in that case or not, but I'm going to
talk to Eric. He may be able to help you, and if he can't help you, he may be able to defer you to someone. But talk to Eric from the Courtroom Observers Group right on NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Okay, thanks for welcoming me. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. 30 seconds.
Michigan Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, it won't take about a minute. I really want to thank you for all the information you passed out tonight, and I'm starting to learn a little bit more. But I have just one comment outside of that, and I think the first time you put a couple of judges in prison for 20 years under Title 18, I think you'll have a real winner, and I don't think you'll have to be worrying about the courts too much from that point on.
Yep.
And maybe a couple sheriffs along with them, and we got the right cases here in Michigan to get a couple of these sheriffs and a couple of these judges, if not three or four that I know of.
Well, I
agree with you, Gary, and thank you for the call. Yeah. We're going to end the call at this point. Sorry.
Thank you again. Good night.
We appreciate
it. Good night,
it.
And may our Father bless you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thank
God bless you. And thank you, everybody, for coming in. And for those who didn't get into the queue, we'll get in next week, and we'll try to push those who have been trying to get on and haven't gotten onto the call, we'll try to put them up front next week so they can get into the call. How you doing, Paul? I'll give you 10 seconds if you want to say something.
Okay, John, I'm attaching the quo warranto to all of the testimony that I'm giving to the Hawaii legislature for a new bill.
Okay.
Okay, just heads up.
Cool.
Good move. Let's talk next week. Okay, with that, we'll see you all. Aloha. Lord willing, we'll see you all next week. Now, we're going to have a lead-out song, a lead-in song, a lead-out song. We do post the lyrics. These are pretty good songs. They have a purpose for why we choose these songs, so you might want to go out and look at the lyrics and follow along, and they're very uplifting, in my opinion. Okay, with that, we're going to end Q&A. Let me go to lecture. if I can get this thing working here. Not lead out call. Thanks for coming. God bless. Lord willing, next week, Monday. And don't forget, we have Bible studies on Saturday. Good night. Lyrics could be found at nationallibertyalliance.org. Click on Weekly Call, top left side above the blue bar, and the lyrics will be on that page. Good night.
Good night.
What happened to the song? Oh, there it goes. Thank you.
Don't